Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast, yours, mine, and theirs. I'm John, and please be aware that a podcaster's love is very different than that of a square.
Okay, very good. Hey, everybody, this is Roy, and John, you remind me of the Babe.
The Babe? The power of the... Wait, the Babe?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to start over. Hey, John, you remind me of the Babe.
The Babe?
Who oh, do? My gosh, we can't do this. Okay.
I do? Do I? Which...
Okay, we're done. Okay, we're moving on to my other greeting, because you can't do this. This is Roy Fillmore coming to you from the Pork Chop Express, and all I can tell you is the same thing I told my ventriloquist dummies, Taylor. It's all in the reflexes.
Okay,
and
cool.
Now, you can
now I know who
the
you
first
are.
Attempt out because you did it so poorly.
Hello, and my name is Brookheim, and I'm here to join you today because I have electrolytes.
Ah, yes.
It's what you need. It's what your body
what
wants.
You need.
Right. It's why your plants like are slowly growing toward you. Yeah.
It's true.
Okay, cool. Brooke is back for her, you know, her community service or a lot of community service with us. I, you know, Brooke, it's funny. I just realized you were with us last week and we talked about the movies that made you. And you were with us before, but this is the first time you've been with us like on a normal episode, one where, you know, like the movies are all random and we do the voting and everything, because last time you were with us, you were on my movies that made me. And so this is kind of the first time you've been with us, like really, really. So how does that feel?
True. I have to say that these movies were a gift. To me.
Oh, good.
Just call them a gift.
I'm so scared to talk about these movies, because the fact that you gave us this vague message saying it's like, oh, wow, these, you pretty much said, okay, I've watched two of them, and they're the worst movies I've ever seen, and so that kind of makes me nervous. and then also you, like, voted in the poll sarcastically about which one is your favorite, and that also makes me nervous, too. So... we'll get to that. We're going to talk about it. First, there's something I wanted to ask you about that I forgot to ask you about last time, and that's your career as a clubhouser. Because I have the Clubhouse app, which is this weird thing where, you know, a bunch of people get together and talk to each other, and it's kind of like weird live podcasting, but also audience participation a lot, and it's weird, and I'm not part of the culture, I don't know what it is, but my phone does buzz like every hour saying, Brookheim is like leading a discussion over here, and Brooke is doing this over here, and she's like, and so like, I feel like you're the biggest thing on that app, and so I don't know if there's a story there.
Well, you know, I am on the app a lot, and I actually, so I was telling you guys before we started recording that I was in Denver this past weekend, and I was actually out there for a conference with people that I know only from Clubhouse. Like, wow. One of the women, her name is Ashley Faye Designs, and she is on track to be in the top 2%, like one of the only female-led businesses in the country that's going to make over $1 million this year. And there were a bunch of us out there to lead a business conference called Embrace Your Ambition, and we only know each other from being in Clubhouse rooms together and having been talking to each other since January. We all just met for the first time in person this weekend. And Clubhouse is really interesting. It is. It's like live podcasting. It's more, I refer to it more like talk radio, right, where you get to see, like, it's like a constant stream of talk radio, only you get to interject and you get to be invited up to speak in the different rooms. And I have been fortunate enough to be able to go in and speak on a variety of subjects, none of which thus far have been movies, which is really interesting, because I have this, like, movie podcasting group over in left field over here, and then in right field I have my Clubhouse existence where I talk about, you
like,
know,
the real world.
Yeah, like sex coaching, and I talk about business and entrepreneurs and social media and women in business and spirituality and these different things. And so it's a really cool marrying. If you guys ever wanted to get in and do a movie room, I would love it. Like, there are so many geeks on Clubhouse that don't have, like, there just aren't very many rooms around that. And in fact, today, a bunch of the friends flew in from Denver to be here in Salt Lake because the Iron Cowboy is running his 100th Iron Cowboy tomorrow. He's done 100 days of Iron Cowboys in a row. Of Ironmans, excuse me. He's done an Ironman a day for 100 days.
What?
And
what's an Iron Cowboy?
Not an Iron. He calls himself the Iron Cowboy, but he's done 100 Ironmans in a row.
Does he do Ironman and Clubhouse at the same time? How does he have time to do that?
He does, actually.
Really? Like he's running along and he just like he has his headphones in and he's just talking on Clubhouse?
Yeah, he'll pull it up and talk while he's doing the marathon portion of it. So it's really fascinating. So they all came into town and they were like, well, we don't mean to be rude, but why would people have you on movie podcasts? Like, you don't talk about that at all. And I was like, well, actually I do a lot in like my real life. That's not a part of Clubhouse. We talk about movies a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's awesome. And you do, and, you know, of course that's kind of how we know you. So, you know, we know you got that covered, but I would love to do that someday, but also I kind of wouldn't love to do it because, you know, I'll tell you, as the person who edits this podcast, there's like something pretty much every single 2 weeks, there's like a story that I tell that I just completely edit out because I'm like, oh, this sounds like very ignorant. So I'm going to make myself look better by just taking it out. Like, and I wouldn't be able to do that with a live group of people.
The nice thing about Clubhouse is that none of it is recorded. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have this platform to go and make connections with people in real time. And then it's kind of nice that it just disappears into the ether and you have to be like constant in your connections with people. I don't know. It's an interesting platform. It's strange.
No, it is interesting. And since it's talk radio, you meet a lot of fellow extreme right wing libertarians, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I love how you just didn't even elaborate on that. Okay. Well, we were both being sarcastic there, I think. Okay. All right. So, anyway, let's get back to the movies. This time on our very normal Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast, the thing that the Facebook group nominated... Again, this is our very special... Actually, you know what? This isn't even a normal podcast, huh? This is our Resurrection podcast, which we only do once a year.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so yeah. Brooke, you still haven't really been on our podcast yet. but it's like the topic is Resurrection, and it's resurrecting a topic that we've done already. And the topic we've done already was movies that failed at the box office, that didn't make their money back, but do have a positive score on Rotten Tomatoes, so they should have made money, because technically they're good. You know, this is all... I mean, there's some subjectivity to it, but, you know, it's like, quote, good movies that failed. Roy, do you remember the movies we talked about last time when we did this?
Yeah, we talked about Hudsucker Proxy.
Yes.
We talked about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
Which is a pre-Iron Man Robert Downey Jr., and he's really good in that film, right? And so is Val Kilmer. Your movie, and I can never remember the name of your movie.
Ah, that's so fitting, because it's Never Let Me Go.
Never Let Me
Which
Go.
Which you do bi-weekly, or bi-monthly, I guess. Not twice a week.
Yeah.
Twice a month you let me go, and you disappoint me. Which is one of my very favorite movies, Never Let Me Go. It's good. Okay, so now, though, we are talking about Labyrinth, which apparently was a huge failure, even though everybody I know has seen it a bunch of times, and Big Trouble in Little China, which, by the way, in the theaters at the same time as Labyrinth, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's 5 days apart, those two.
Yeah, which is nuts.
Really?
They get an award for that, yeah. So apparently in, like July 2nd, 1986, is that when it was?
Yep.
I mean, that's just like two down. No one was seeing movies. Like, no one was seeing Big Trouble in Little China because they were all seeing Labyrinth, and no one was seeing Labyrinth because they were all seeing Big Trouble in Little China. So it was like, they canceled each other out, I guess. I don't know, that's my only explanation. There's no other explanation for it, because why wouldn't you, you know? That's just two down. I'll have to, I might have to do some research, find out, like, what big movie was out. Probably Top Gun or something, right? Everyone just saying Top Gun. Okay.
So I'd love, after we talk about each movie, after we sum it up, I'd love to talk about why we think maybe these movies failed.
Yes.
And because, like, Labyrinth kind of puzzles me, and maybe Labyrinth isn't your cup of tea, maybe it is, mm-hmm. but it puzzles me that it failed because it didn't have to make that much money back. it wasn't an expensive film. But anyway, we should talk about
really,
that.
Really, that's shocking. It's so well done.
The budget, I want to say, I mean, I feel like there was a lot of money in it. I mean, do Muppets work for cheaper than a human?
Well, there's a union, right? But 25 million and a movie aimed at kids because this okay, we're kind of getting into Labyrinth now. Labyrinth was sort of a sequel to the Crystal.
Dark
what
Crystal.
Was that called? Dark Crystal.
Yes.
Yeah, not really like the story-wise a sequel, but like Jim Henson's like, okay, I want to do three movies, Dark Crystal, and then two more, right? And I don't know what the third would have been. But this was the follow-up to Dark Crystal, and Dark Crystal was a successful film, right?
And amazing.
So why Dark Crystal, which gave me nightmares for years, was so financially successful, and this wasn't, is a little puzzling to me.
It's very puzzling to me because, you know, we could talk about the quality of both of them, but I feel like, I mean, I grew up in that time, and I just feel like everyone saw Labyrinth, but people didn't see Dark Crystal. Like, especially now, like, looking back, like, I feel like hardly anybody's seen Dark Crystal. I guess they did make the new Netflix show, which is always a sign that, you know, something is in the consciousness. But if you asked me, like, which one was successful and which one wasn't, I would say, oh, Labyrinth for sure was more successful than Dark Crystal. Labyrinth was more,
really?
You know, accessible. Dark Crystal is, like... As much as I love the weirdness to Labyrinth, Dark Crystal is way weirder, you know? Which
is
a good thing, right? But, I mean, I would just think, more people would see Labyrinth.
Because Dark Crystal, I feel like it's all fantasy. And you know that it's all fantasy, and the storyline is dark and twisted and creepy, but it flows well. And it is very scary, but I grew up watching Dark Crystal a lot. I watched The Labyrinth once. As a child, and I was like, this is terrifying, this is garbage, I don't understand why the man in the tight pants keeps singing and thrusting at me, and I think I shall never watch it again, and I'm going to go back to the one that I know is all pretend, instead of the weird girl being stolen by the creepy old man.
Yes.
So we can talk about it. Dark Crystal, and even as a kid and now, I've just... Maybe I don't get into the fantasy as much, but it's just not. I don't find the fun in it. Anyway, Dark Crystal cost $15 million, and it made 42. It made 42. So that's a healthy.
Wow! Yeah.
See, Dark Crystal has the uncanny valley for me. I think Labyrinth kind of makes sense because it's this weird thing, like humans interacting with Muppets, kind of. Somehow makes the Muppets more real, but if it's just Muppets and they're supposed to look a lot like humans, it seems weird to me, you know.
So that's a weird thing with like the Labyrinth, but also with like the Muppet, like you said, like you watch The Empire Strikes Back and you don't question Yoda, right? You don't question it, and they're so obviously not real, but you don't question it. And then we get into especially like the Star Wars prequels where it was just like. So obvious the computer generated characters weren't real, and but not in the same way as the Muppets where you just bought it. It's impossible to buy it when they I don't know if it's because they can get close, but there's just
their
something
acting
that's not
was
right.
Better.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but literally, I mean, the acting, like, what did Jack Nicholson say, right? Didn't he say something like 90% of acting is reacting? So how can a CGI thing react to something? But the Muppets, they can react, so.
It's interesting that I never made a connection between Labyrinth and Dark Crystal ever in my whole life. But I did. I felt like Dark Crystal and Willow were, like, of the same family.
Hmm. Well, so that you have the
but
same
there
creative
are no,
forces.
Yeah.
Because Willow, you've got like Warwick Davis, and I think Willow has George Lucas involved, and George Lucas is involved in Labyrinth, right? And I don't know if he was involved in the Dark Crystal, but you kind of have a group of like-minded people that kind of work on these
films. But weren't you saying it was Dark Crystal and Willow that?
Yeah, those were the two that I always associated with each other.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, none of this makes any sense. We're like, these are very. By the way, all three of these movies, By the way, we talked about Willow on another episode. We're going to have to talk about Dark Crystal coming up. I think that'll be exciting. We can do the trifecta, Willow, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth. But yeah, I mean, all of them, I guess, depending on your personality, you're just not going to accept the bizarreness of each of them, you know? So that totally makes sense. Okay, and, before I forget, we're also talking about Idiocracy. I don't think I got a chance to mention that because that's another movie we're talking about right now. This doesn't bode well. We're going to probably take forever. Although, Brooke, whenever you're with us, we're so efficient with time. It's amazing. I felt like we talked for like 5 hours last time, but it was only like 2 hours. It was like something.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. But let's officially talk about Labyrinth now, for sure.
Okay.
So this is what Labyrinth's about. It's a young Jennifer Connelly. She kind of has like, she has, it's really young Jennifer Connelly. Like, she really looks like a teenager. So she has the kind of just pudgy cheekness kind of thing.
She plays 16, but when she started filming, she was 14.
Oh, yikes. Okay. So young girl, which is part of it. It's part of it that she's young, but it's definitely part of it that she's a teenager also, which is a thing. She is hanging out in the park, right, doing cosplay, I guess. I think, is she acting out her own novel?
I think you have to accept that the Labyrinth is as something that exists, like someone has written it. Because you go back to her room.
And where she has the book there.
She has the book, but she also has all the characters. As it pans across her room, you see Ludo, you see Didymus, you see Hoggle. Like, all the characters are in her room. Yeah, they're all there.
That's probably true. I mean, okay. I guess I sort of want to believe that Labyrinth is her story. And so I choose to believe that those are all just like stuffed animals and characters that she has, and she does have something called Labyrinth, and she's really into mazes, and she draws mazes like on her binder at school and stuff like that. And she has all these different stuffed animals that aren't necessarily related to each other, but when she does go into this imagination thing in her mind, she combines all those things in her room and forms her own world. That's what happens. Yeah, that's what happens in this movie. That's final. I'm summing up this movie. Okay. This is my movie. So, anyway, she does that. Anyway, her parents say, hey, you got to watch Toby, your stupid half-brother. I believe it's her half-brother, right?
Yeah.
Because that's her stepmom, and so that's probably, you know, the new baby. And she's like, I don't like him. and, you know, why can't I just, you know, be my own thing? She's a stressed-out little teenager, which I think is one of the points of the movie. She wishes in her world that's, I believe, in her mind, and we could actually, you know what, you guys can...
That's a debate, too.
Yeah, that's a debate. I know we kind of had a debate on this on some of the Facebook comments, but I'm thinking this is all her. This is because it's all related to her stresses and traumas built this world, is what I think, anyway.
Also, I think it's...
Oh my gosh, you actually just made me like this movie with that last statement.
Oh, good.
But
Damn you.
It's a product of her age, too, right? Because she's at that like teenage point where she's starting to have to deal with growing up, right?
Right.
And she has all these childish things that she wants to hang on to, and then that gets addressed later in the movie with the junk lady who tries to tell her how important all these things that she loves are.
Yes.
But... it's time to let go of those things, right? Anyway.
No, exactly.
Keep summing.
So anyway, the Goblin King takes Toby away, and then she goes through a maze, she makes some friends, and she gets through the maze, and she saves Toby. I don't know. The Goblin and also the Goblin King is played by a sex symbol with a very... I mean, this is part of the plot, right? And I think this is not just a joke, but I think David Bowie's prominent unit... is part of the plot.
It's incredibly intentional.
Yeah. Because of her development. Because
right?
of her like development, that's... because of her age. She's, you know, 16 years old, allegedly. but, you know, her stepmom says, you know, I really wish you'd go out on dates. You know, it's time. I think her projection of David Bowie's dick in her face the entire movie is what she's worried about. Like, that's what's so on her mind.
Terrified.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I never thought in my life I would hear you say the words David Bowie's dick in her face.
it's yeah. No, I say it all the time in real life. It's like my kid.
can we agree, though, to be glad that it's David Bowie? Because people who are considered include Michael Jackson, Prince, Mick Jagger, and Sting. And I'm so glad it's David Bowie.
David Bowie is great. It's probably the best one, although I really want to see the Sting.
I'd go for Sting. Yeah.
I think so, that would be really cool.
Jim Henson wanted Sting, but his kids convinced him to do David Bowie, because I guess Let's Dance had just come out.
No, it's perfect. It's so weird because David Bowie's like considered such a legend, but he was never like huge. I guess Just Dance was like the biggest he was, but
he looked pretty huge in this movie.
Nice.
Because he had just finished watching what was that movie? Doggone it, I can never remember that name of the movie with Val Kilmer, the spy movie.
Oh, Top Secret. Yeah.
Top Secret, yeah. And he thought, you know, he watched the ballet scene from Top Secret and I've got a good costume idea.
It was like that was the budget. Maybe it was the same studio. It's like, okay, well, the people over at Top Secret, they have some, you know, kind of medieval ballet things. Maybe that would work for this. And it's just like David Bowie's like, yes, excellent. Yes, perfect.
So while we're talking about different casting, you want to know who was who tried out for Jennifer Connelly's part?
Julia
this
Roberts.
Is pretty crazy. Helena Bonham Carter, oh. Jane Krakowski, Yasmin Bleeth. Oh. Sarah Jessica Parker, Mary Stuart Masterson, Laura Dern, Lily Taylor, let's see, Mia Sara, Marissa Tomei, and then Ali Sheedy. And I'm like convinced that because Ali Sheedy's name keeps popping up as also tried out for this role, right? So I feel like Ali Sheedy was supposed to have an incredible career, and right. She just lost out. She was like second pick for every single movie.
Two podcasts ago, we talked a lot about Ali Sheedy and like, where was Ali Sheedy? She should have been all over the place a lot more than she was. Yep. Yeah. Okay, Mia Sara, that would have been really great, but you can't cast Mia Sara because she was just in Legend. And so that would typecasting Mia Sara, and that's not fair. She has to be so Sloan Peterson eventually.
And that and you know, Legend and Labyrinth were filming in neighboring studios, so they actually like intermingled quite a bit.
Oh, did they? I thought Legend was like earlier. It wasn't? I guess I don't know.
This is the only one I read the trivia for. So it just says that those movies were filming at the same time in neighboring studios, and so the cast hung out together.
Speaking of Jennifer Connelly being like 14 in this, I think I read somewhere that Mia Sara was like 15 in Legend, and that makes me feel a lot grosser, actually.
A lot grosser.
Oh. Okay, but you know what, Sting? You know what, Sting should have. They should have gotten Sting because by in my canon of this movie, Sting is exactly what they needed, because I think this movie is about her intimidation of boys, right? She's like expected, and it. You don't know this unless you get the trivia. If you look at the trivia, because speaking of like things in her room and things in the house, there is a picture of her mother in her room, apparently. And I didn't notice this, but her mother is with David Bowie, like a guy who looks. So apparently in the story, it's not completely spelled out, that her mother that she loves was taken away by this David Bowie type character. And so I think that's what's in her mind is like, you know, am I going to be like my mother? Am I going to be seduced away by this, you know, by this, you know, smooth talking, you know, guy who says all this stuff? Is that the kind of person I am?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I have to poke a hole in that, because I want to believe that this all happens in her mind. Uh-huh. But there's parts of the story that happen away from her, right?
That's
unless
true.
She's just like the omniscient narrator where she controls in her mind things that are happening not in her presence.
Yes.
Except I've had a lot of dreams like that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like where you're not in the dream and you like...
Where I'm not in the dream, I'm observing what's happening away from what's going on for me.
Well, there you go. So it can happen. Yeah. So that's the theory.
Not that I am any bar for normality, by the way.
So anyway, yeah, I am happy to believe that theory, that this all happens in her mind.
Yes. Okay. No, I'm good with that. The only thing I have to mention is the movie, like, her concern about being manipulated and opening up, like, because she's been by herself just with her toys, and I think the labyrinth is sort of a symbol of her navigating through this new stage of her life, so to say. When David Bowie is saying all the things to her, and actually, before I get to that, we should mention there is a sequence that doesn't make any sense in the movie, and that sequence is when she has the dream within the dream that David Bowie is no longer her enemy, but is sort of seducing her through dance in the masquerade.
When they're in the bubble?
Scene. Yeah. Yeah. And so
that's the only part that doesn't make sense to you?
Yeah, that's the only part. Well, I do think it makes sense to me. Everything in this movie makes perfect sense to me. But that part especially makes sense to me because it is, you know, this kind of thing. You know, when you're young and, you know, you have this battle of the sexes, you know, when I was, like, a little kid, I remember, like, girls were kind of the enemy. And, you know, the way boys and girls teased each other, I don't know if there's something ingrained in us where we know we're going to grow up and like each other, but we kind of have to tease each other first. I don't know what that is, but, like, when you transition between that where, like, the boys in your life are no longer your enemy, there's something to be figured out, you know? And her enemy is, like, doing these enemy, evil, antagonist things, but then there's a sequence where it's like, okay, now here's someone who's trying to be nice to me, and how much do I trust that niceness? And that's what that is. And so she's, like, trying to imagine, you know, these beings that used to be her enemies, like, okay, they're going to be mean to me, they're going to be kind to me, am I going to fall for it? Because then it comes back around at the end when he tells her all those things. It's like, okay, if you do what I say, then you'll have everything you want. And it's like, if you do what I say, then you'll be, like, he has a bunch of those lines where he kind of says this doublespeak. And the line that she was trying to get at the very beginning when she was cosplaying her own work was, the line she was trying to remember is, you have no power over me. And so I think that's what she's saying at the very end of the movie. It's like, okay, you know what? You're slimy and you're weird, and I'm not going to be enchanted by you. You actually have no power over me. And so that's kind of what I think the movie is about, and also saving your little brother, as a side.
That's so really interesting to me, especially since in that scene all the things that used to be good and comforting are now kind of blurred and out of focus and scary to her.
Right. This gets into, we're going to talk about this at the end, about why these movies failed. I think, if anything, the reason Labyrinth failed is because it is that what Jim Henson was trying to do was find a sweet spot that he couldn't quite find between, like, a kid's movie and an adult movie. This is a movie about going from being a kid's movie to an adult movie and, like, trying to, you know, figure out the emotions between the two stages.
So this movie, then, the target of this film is an audience that has no interest in watching it, right? Which
exactly.
is kind of teenagers?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it feels like a kid's movie, but the themes are more adult, and it's about, like, that transition. And so, but this is definitely
the
not, like,
are creepy.
This isn't a teen film.
Yeah.
Hey, so by the way, you guys say Sting, but whatever. Like, one of the best parts of this film is the soundtrack that is not just performed by David Bowie. He wrote these songs.
Yes.
And I'll take these songs over anything that I think Sting would have written. So take that, Sting.
Yeah.
You know what? I have to 100% wholeheartedly disagree with you.
Well, you're welcome to, but you're wrong.
The movie was the part of this music, or... The music was the part of this movie that kept tuning me out.
Oh, no. I love this soundtrack so much.
I think I might like it as a soundtrack separately, but, like, during the movie, I was like, what the heck? What is actually happening here? Why are we singing about slapping the damn baby? And what is...
Well, the baby had it coming. And actually, so I will say, like, it's a little weird because now that I've learned that when he's singing the magic dance song, David Bowie is verbalizing the baby noises, and now it's harder to listen to. Because when I thought it was just like a giggling baby, now it's David Bowie making weird noises.
That's really weird.
It's bizarre. You gotta commend David Bowie for committing. In fact,
when you were talking about Dark Crystal and Labyrinth earlier, what I was going to say is the reason that Dark Crystal was successful was because it didn't have all the weird songs from David Bowie in it.
Oh my goodness,
confusing
Brooke.
Plot.
So John and I were talking earlier about how we're afraid of when we like heavily disagree on movies because you're invested in the movies you like, but then also John was saying, but maybe we don't have healthy disagreement often enough. Yes. So I'll chalk this up to healthy disagreement because the songs are great and David Bowie's great and Sting is Sting's a big boring dump face. So there.
We need to watch Dune with Sting.
Yeah, at some point we got to watch Dune, which I've never seen in my life.
Oh, dang it. We need to hurry and watch it before the new Dune. We'll figure out a way to watch Dune. Oh, my gosh. JR, you know David Lynch did Dune, you know, the Twin Peaks guy.
Yeah, someone suggested doing a Lynch Fest, but, you know, there's got to be a way to figure out how to... I mean, we already did...
Careful with the usage of the term Lynch Fest.
Okay, you can edit that part out.
Okay.
So, you know, we already did, what do you call it? I was thinking just movies about sandworms, but we already did...
Beetlejuice. We did the one other movie with the sandworm.
the only other movie. Yeah.
Oh, crap. No. Dune is so glorious and amazing and bad in the best way. It's the best kind of bad, Dune. It's just... Okay. It's great. I do want to mention another thing about Labyrinth, and I don't know if anybody noticed, and I don't think this is true, because I think it did come from somewhere else, but is J.K. Rowling a fan of Labyrinth?
Right? Because I noticed that also, and I was like, oh, apparently Hogwarts has its beginning somewhere.
Yes, exactly. I'm glad you caught on to that, because
yes.
They mention it twice. They say... Someone says, thanks for nothing, Hogwart. And he's like, no, it's Hoggle. Yeah. You know, and then David Bowie calls him Hedgewort. And then she calls him, no, it's Hogwart.
It's Hogwart.
It's like, no, it's Hoggle. So, yeah.
So Jim Henson and J.K. Rowling both got Hogwart from the same source. I mean, neither of them originated it, right? It came from some other book or something.
Ah, okay.
You know, somewhere... In some other universe, I feel like Jim Henson is J.K. Rowling's grandfather. And that there's, like, this weird, twisty darkness between them that, like, doesn't excuse but explains some of what's going on there.
Right. Some of the J.K. Rowling stuff?
Yeah.
So I love Jim Henson, and I love, like, the stuff he's produced, but, like, at some point when, like, Muppets are that much your life, right... Does that affect
right.
you? Like,
it has to.
Yeah, no, probably. Okay, no, that's funny. We can do... Maybe we could do a Jim Henson Fest. Did Jim Henson work on the sandworms in Dune?
Yes.
Okay, we'll definitely do that. let's see. What else do I have to mention about Labyrinth? I'm trying to... I skipped all of the crazy, weird set pieces. It's a movie filled with crazy, weird set pieces... and crazy weird Muppets and a lot of optical illusions that, you know, we'll get to. The only scene I didn't like was the scene where she kept taking off those guys' heads and kicking their heads. Other than that, it's my favorite movie. I've loved it ever since I was 35 when I first saw it. So
Are you serious?
Wait,
you saw
what?
It for the first time at 35?
I did not see Labyrinth as a kid.
Oh, wow.
Labyrinth.
Hold on.
I wholeheartedly agree with you though that the one scene that I really don't like is with the guys with their heads that come off, and like because I did see this as a kid, like that really gave me nightmares. Like that.
What
scene
about
was just
the helping
awful.
Hands?
The helping hands is also bad, but I didn't have nightmares. I just had dreams that those guys wanted to take my head off, and I knew that my head wasn't supposed to come off. So,
oh, you had dreams.
So
okay.
You legitimately you really do love this movie.
I love Labyrinth. I love it.
And you really didn't see it until you were 35.
I can't remember when I saw it, but
I was watching it. I was like, well, maybe this is kind of like people who love Empire Records versus people who don't really care for it at all. they grew up with watching Empire Records, and so they have an affinity to it, even though, like, it's a great movie, but it's not critically acclaimed, right? And I was truly, like, I was watching Labyrinth, and I was just like, maybe it's just because I didn't watch it when I was young enough. Maybe that's why I just can't get into this, but that doesn't hold true with you.
Now, John, we would have had to have watched this our freshman year of college, because, I mean,
we did.
Alan and I both loved this film.
That's when I saw it. No, it was freshman year of college. So I guess I was pretty young, and I age at a different rate than I think most people. Where freshman year of college, that's pretty much when I was 6 years old, pretty much, you know, just like personality-wise. And I'm glad you brought this up, because going back to the music, I do have to mention it. I can't remember if our friend... You probably knew him, Ammon, in high school. He was on our podcast. He was on ours, and he was on your podcast, too. And so I can't remember if at the same time, but you probably knew him anyway. When he got married, you know, when he was, you know, when I was 21 and he got married, he and his wife danced to As the World Falls Down, David Bowie, from this movie, the masquerade scene. Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Because it's a really good song.
That is a good song.
I don't know. It might be a boy-girl thing. I think only boys like Labyrinth, maybe.
My daughter loves it.
Oh, okay.
But that makes sense age-wise, because I watched Empire Records, like, freshman year of college. Mm-hmm. And it is my go-to when I need to just turn something on.
See, and we almost watched that with you last time, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because when I did like the my three movies, and I don't expect you listen to this, but like all three of my movies were movies I watched my freshman year in college, right?
Mm. Yeah.
We did Metropolis, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and what was the other one? The Indian film, World of Apu. I saw all those my freshman year of college, so that's fascinating.
Yeah, I kind of wish we talked Empire Records, because I don't know, Brooke, I don't know if I've seen it all the way through, but I think the first time I saw it, it was like when I was like, I think I may have been like 23 or something, and I think I was like just old enough to dislike it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess you've seen that phenomenon a lot, you know, with some of the people that you've shown the movie to, based on...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, that's interesting. We'll have to watch Empire... Okay, add that to the list. It's funny.
We'll do Empire Records and Savannah Smiles, and we'll find another way to pull some other one in there. And
Savannah Smiles. Oh, my gosh. I want to do Savannah
Smiles. Roy loves
Savannah
Smiles, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, anyway, I didn't go through the details of Labyrinth, but those are my feelings on Labyrinth, anyway.
So when we get to the awards, because someone's going to mention some of the optical illusions, but when we get to that part, we then have to talk about all of them, because there are some really incredible optical illusions in this film.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, those are awards. Those are awards worthy. So
they are.
Okay, so that is that's Labyrinth. The next movie is a little movie called Big Trouble in Little China. I think we're all not super familiar with this one. I do remember seeing it. I remember having a very different experience the first time I saw it, maybe because it was like at a midnight showing instead of, you know, one afternoon. But Brooke, do you remember Big Trouble in Little China at all?
So I had never watched it until this past week.
Nice.
Oh, wow. So I saw it as a kid.
Do you remember it from this last week?
Like, this was a babysit my kids movie.
I think Big Trouble in Little China is one of those movies that, okay, I mean, you talk about like dream sequence. Big Trouble in Little China seems more dreamy to me than Labyrinth. It seems like more like because it's like you remember it differently, and it has like it's even more bizarre in a lot of ways. I don't know.
So while you're watching it, you probably feel like Jack Burton the whole time, who like can't stop saying, "What's going on?" Like, what? And it's weird because I watch it and like, oh, okay, I remember, and but then like as I was researching it again to kind of like get my words, I was like, oh yeah, that happened. Oh yeah, that happened. And I'd seen it just like 3 days ago, right?
Yeah.
An odd film. Weird movie.
It was interesting. Of the three movies that we are talking about, it was the first one that I watched. Uh-huh. And when you guys were now, you were just like, yeah, we'll have you do the summary on it. And I was like, what did I watch?
Yeah. It's totally one of those. It's
that like you watch movie?
It and you remember, like, it's not that you didn't, Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be, like, whether...
I was very engaged while I was watching it.
Right, yeah. But it's like, so, one of those things that kind of slips through you.
So the plot essentially is green eyes, long fingernail, and reflexes. Green.
Well, I feel like the plot is all focused around green.
Yeah, it
you've
is.
Got the green money at the beginning, you've got the gambling, you've got the green eyes, and you've got the green ooze that just starts coming out of everywhere. And everything in this movie is just sort of circulating around green, which in the end you just feel really confused about.
It's because John Carpenter believes in Earth Day. He was trying to make us
trying to let us know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the movie starts out with our friend. When, you know, in the beginning, they talk about Egg Shen, and he's talking to his lawyer, I think. It's supposed to be there to help him, and the lawyer's like, why would I believe this? And he does the little magic trick with his fingers, and then we get to understand. Now, I will say that when I started watching the movie, I was like, oh, I hope that this is where Egg Fu comes from, because then I will finally understand my friend's name, Egg Fu Young. So I was like, maybe I'll finally get to figure it out. But it all starts, you know, like, you've got the truck driver who is loud and brash and just like yelling on his CB radio, and he comes in and he's playing money tricks, card tricks with his friend and taking all of his money, and his friend's like, no, you can't do this, I need the money for my fiance, she's wonderful. And then you get to the airport and we meet Sex in the City for the first time, and you're like, oh, okay, well, now everything's coming together in my life that I never understood from before, so I'm glad I'm watching this movie. And all of a sudden, the fiance is being stolen away because she's not someone else, which I don't feel like they ever really resolved that.
I don't understand who was being kidnapped, and because, like, Kim Cattrall
had the wrong person.
Right. Were they supposed to kidnap Kim Cattrall's friend, but also Kim Cattrall also has green eyes? But also, like, this was a completely different gang, because this isn't, like...
Right.
Yeah.
They end up there on accident. And I will say, I think that that is where the movie gets off track for me.
Right.
It's because my little autistic brain is like, but wait, we're supposed to care about this other person, and now they don't matter at all. And that other gang doesn't matter at all. And all of a sudden, we're in Little China, and the wrong girl has been kidnapped, and Kim Cattrall is not Asian in any way, but does have green eyes, and is suddenly become integral to the plot because he needs to have one he can keep and one he can kill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going through, and my biggest question as I went through this movie is, how do Asian Americans feel about this movie?
It's probably problematic, right? A little bit, right? So
I can't speak for Asian Americans, but one thing I noticed is most of the Asians in this movie don't have accents, which
I kind of appreciated that.
Yeah, I think if I were Asian American, I would appreciate that. You know, not because, I mean, because, okay, a lot of Asians have accents, and that's true. But in movies, a lot of Asians have accents when they don't need to have accents.
Right, and they're so forced.
Yeah, and so it's like kind of, and so, like, if I were Asian America, and I can tell there were actors who were like, you can tell directors are saying, play up your Asian accent, you know, because we really need to sell your Asian-ness in this, Asian, then that would really annoy me. And so to see, you know, a bunch of, you know, Asian Americans, you know, like, speaking in American accents rather than Asian accents, I think that's one thing that can be appreciated. I don't know about everything else in the movie, but that's just one thing I noticed.
Yeah. So Jack Burton's friend's fiance gets stolen, and they decide to barrel after him in a high-speed chase in a semi-truck for Little China, because semi-trucks are known for speed, which doesn't make any sense. So they're going, and then all of a sudden this war breaks out, and then the three Asian
Raidens.
Wizards? Like, what?
The three Raidens.
You ever play Mortal Kombat, Brooke?
Yes.
Remember the, you know, the lightning guy in Mortal Kombat? That's like, yes. It's these three guys, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so they pop down, and then all of a sudden we're in this chase through what I figure is another labyrinth. Through a building. Trying to make sense. But the whole time I keep thinking, I'm like, okay. I'll get to that later. I apologize. My brain. I get distracted by the movie poster for this movie. Because it's got Jack, like, Burton's character. What is his name?
Kurt Russell,
thank you. And Kim Cattrall on the movie poster. But the movie really isn't their movie, right?
Right. No, that's no, you're not wrong.
He looks so happy in the poster. Doesn't Jack just look...
Yeah, and the whole time he's just kind of like, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I'm doing this. Yes. I don't really care, but I can't let all of you idiots die, so I guess this is what we're doing.
I think... I'm not sure, and I mean... I feel like I kind of appreciate this a little bit more because this might be my third time seeing it, even though it's like I still feel like I haven't seen it. It's like one of those, you know, obviously we talked about that. But I think that's one of the jokes is,
yeah,
you know, is we're looking at it through Jack Burton's eyes and he's just asking questions. I was listening to another podcast today. It wasn't very good.
He just wants his money.
Yeah, he just... You know, he just wants this thing. But I think there's a YouTube supercut. I'm going to have to look for it. Maybe I'll post it in notes if it's good. But apparently there's this YouTube cut of just all the times Kurt Russell asks a question in Big Trouble in Little China. And it's just like, it's like 5 minutes of him saying, "What is that? What's going on? Who are you?" You know, like that's most of his dialogue through the whole movie. And so I kind of think that's one of the jokes. And Brooke, I think you nailed it, though, because I did read that John Carpenter wanted to make a movie where it wasn't so much like this superhero has like this Asian American sidekick who's like, you know, but the hero is Wang, right? His name? Yeah. Like, he's the hero. It's his fiancée they're trying to save. He does all the really cool stuff. Jack Burton gets knocked unconscious a few times. He's not that good. But nevertheless, it's like from his perspective, but the actual hero of the story is the other guy, but it's just Jack Burton is like, you know, on the poster and everything.
And I found that was really interesting.
Jack Burton's just laying on the floor unconscious during the final fight, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting also because it's like, okay, he's sort of the accidental, very resistant hero in this movie,
yeah,
but he's not actually the hero. And the thing that confused me on that is because when Egg Sheen is in talking to his lawyer, he was like, "You leave Jack Burton alone. He saved us all. He is a hero." And I was like, okay, when are we going to get to the hero part?
Shouldn't have been in the movie. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it's yeah. So confusing. So, yeah. He gets
the killing blow, right? Like, he doesn't do most of the work, but he does, like, when it comes down to it, he beats Lopan.
Which surprised me. I feel like that kind of took away from the joke of him not being a great guy. Like, I was very surprised when Kurt Russell kills the main guy at the end. That was like, oh, okay, we're going to switch it all up around. I mean, he just got knocked unconscious. I thought that was
the only reason that it makes sense to me was because in our lives, we often don't choose when we are, like, we don't have a choice of when we're going to get to, like, I'm going to be 32 and I'm going to have these things going on and suddenly I'm going to get to be the hero. That's how my life is going to go. Mm-hmm. We have things that happen and he resists, and he's like kind of indignant and also kind of an asshole and doesn't like really understand and doesn't want to be helping. But then in the end, when faced with the thing, the giant in front of him, he steps up and does it instinctually, yep. Not necessarily out of a choice, but because we're already in it, and I do care about the people in my life, and when the pressure is on, I will take action.
So, and he's got his friends back, right? Because there's a few parts where his friend's like, this is about to suck, and he's like, you know, he doesn't have to be, like, forced to help, right? So he does, and by the way, his friend's name is Wong Chur. So that's fascinating. But I feel
does
like...
Does that mean something? Why is that fascinating?
It's fascinating because I feel like when most Americans look at that name, they probably think of Wang, like Wang Computers.
Wang Computers.
Yeah, so it feels like what Americans think a Chinese person should be named, right? Like Wang. But anyway, but I get that he doesn't do most of the fighting and he doesn't have like exceptional skills, but he's got his friends back.
Yeah, and I like he that didn't have to be he a part was of drawn this way. I like that the character development happened this way, that it's sort of resistant and accidental, but that it still happens. Like, I actually, it makes me, if he had come out of the gate, like, now all of a sudden I'm this great guy. Like, it's not. Like, they put a lot of time into showing us that he was not a great guy.
Yeah.
So,
and I like that they held true to that.
And he got just a little bit better. Like, he wasn't the best person at the end. He just got a little bit better.
He's just the real American hero here, right?
Like, so I love that they also use him to kind of like show that like some of the story is BS, right? Like, because Lopan's been around for 2,000 years, and I think Jack Burton says, "So wait a second, for 2,000 years you couldn't find a girl with green eyes? Sounds like you haven't been trying very hard, right?" Like, he says something like that.
And he looked at it and he was like, "Well, you know." This part also really confused me because he was like, "Well, sometimes things just don't work out in love all the time, right?"
Yeah, and like, but in this case, it's working out real well, right?
They don't like neither of them have a choice. How did it not work out before?
Yeah,
they're in a trance. They're completely hypnotized, and you screwed that up. Way to go, buddy! You deserve to be in these 1,000 years of hell.
So I also love, because like a lot of this movie is about the ridiculousness of what's going on and Jack's in the middle of it, but I love like the duo of Jack and Egg Shen, where like Jack has to like confirm that like madness is happening, and he confirms it with Egg Shen, and so like when he like the scene with the flask where he's like, "So what's in the flask? Is that a magic potion, Egg Shen?" He's like, "Yeah." It's like, "Okay, got it. Are we going to be drinking that magic potion, in Egg Shen?" "Yeah." And so like like, just to like stress, like, this is really crazy what's going on, and Egg Shen is like confirming that, yeah, you're right. No, you're not missing it. The, like, really stupid stuff is happening here.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fun. And I don't understand Egg Shen's magic. Like, he's got this weird ring magic or something, but then again, is it easier or harder to understand the fingernail magic? I don't know.
I don't know. I do like the development between, at the very end, between Jack Burton and Kim Cattrall's. I know I'm using real names and fake names. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I can't remember Kim's name.
I understand that I am doing this, and it's not fair.
It's
Grace, between Kurt Russell and Kim Cattrall, because she's
Long,
like,
okay.
"Aren't you going to give me a kiss?" And he's like, he says no, and he walks away, and I was like,
yeah,
so really
you did like that?
Solo.
You did like
is
it.
That his Han Solo moment?
I guess.
I did like it.
I mean,
it's not Grace that says it. It's another girl that says, "Aren't you even going to kiss her?" And he just says, "Nope," just nope, and walks away.
That
right?
was going to be one of my questions at the end, so I'll just ask it now. Why in the world do you not just kiss the girl? Like, even
because
if it's the last time
he cares. Before, when he was like trying to just like, "You want me? You know you want me. Like, let's make out. Let's do this." But then he spends all this time, and he actually saves her, and now he sees her as a being, not just a body. Why would I? I know I'm romanticizing it, and I'm giving him way too much freaking credit. I get that there's a part of it that's just like, I'll just tease her. I'll just screw with her more and make her want me more. But there's also part of me that's like, he grew just a little.
He grew up
just a little.
I didn't read it that way. I guess I see where you're coming from now. It just seems like when you say Jack Burton grew just a little bit, like in order to get to like that step where he's like, "Okay, I am not going to treat women as objects like in the slightest." I think that's far beyond like the level that he.
No, I don't think he was there.
But also, I mean, okay. How do I put this? Like, in that situation, you just went through all this thing, and you're saying goodbye. I mean, if you're Kim Cattrall, I mean, don't you want to be just objectified just for funsies, just at the very end there? You know, don't you want yes. that, you know?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you do.
So, okay, but so what happens now? Like, because he respects her, and because he didn't do that, because, you know, they're equal human beings, does this mean there's a future for them, or is that, like, literally his goodbye? It's like, I'm going to be the most... It's a gentleman goodbye, we're never going to see each other, and I respect you as a person, and that's how it ends. Or is he going to call her up?
Oh, I definitely think it's a ploy to keep her on the hook.
Okay.
He respects her, but he also wants her long term.
So that's the bigger thing. It's like, no, yeah. The mind games are bigger than the gentleman thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see you as a human. I see you as a human that I want to keep in my life for the rest of my being, because I think you're kind of cool. And you're sexy as crap, and you just made it through all of this, and so I'm gonna keep this going. I want this longer.
Nice. Okay. Well, you know what? This reminds me. You know what? I didn't make my awards, but one of my very favorite parts is the big battle after they were like making out hard, like before a big battle, and then he goes into the big battle, and he has like her lipstick like all over her teeth lipstick. And everything.
Yeah.
His teeth. I'd never really seen that in a movie. That's just funny. I don't know.
I think that there's a lot about this movie that is very interesting. There's a lot about it that's really insane. I found it to be very funny in its dryness. Like, the dry humor behind it is very, very much up my alley.
Yeah.
Like, when they're like when the guy goes... flying backwards in the wheelchair, and he almost goes down the pit of despair, and it's Jack Burton, right, who's in the chair?
Yeah, he's in the chair.
Yeah.
And he just, like, wheels forward, just barely, yeah.
Teeter-tottering, yeah, just barely wheels forward, and then jumps out and throws it. Just keep wheeling forward. Literally a wheelchair.
Like the wheelchair is going to explode or something?
Yeah, I better not wheel any further forward. I better jump for my life.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things in this movie that's really funny.
Yeah.
So the more we talk about this movie, the more I want to see it again. I think this movie was just madness, right?
Yes. Well, I feel like it's weird. They're almost funnier to talk about than actually witness. I think there's like something... strange about the tone of the movie, because I remember the movie being really funny from when I saw it years and years and years ago, but then watching it I'm like, this is played really straightforward, you know, like more than I remember. Like, I remember it being a lot more madcap, but it's only talking about it with you guys that I realize how madcap it was, because as I was watching it I was surprised that they weren't sort of playing up the laughs as much as they were, you know. It's like funny things were happening almost in a more serious movie than I remember from before, but that's my problem.
Yeah. And I think that the only way that it makes sense to me is that they were intentionally being dry with the humor, mm-hmm. to kind of add to what the crap is happening.
Yeah.
So instead of him having to ask what was happening in each question, they just made it really dry humor so that you are now asking the questions along with him. Like, what?
Yeah.
And I found myself saying that a lot throughout the movie. Why didn't they just roll forward? What is happening now? Like, why can't... But it makes it so funny.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. It does make sense, but it's so weird. It's like the humor seemed kind of outside the universe of the movie a lot of times. I'm not sure how to describe it other than that. Other than this movie is just, it does that mind trip where you kind of forget you saw it, but then when you're reminded of it, I feel like it's a funnier movie to remember than watch live. But maybe I had a different experience. Because I don't remember laughing out loud, but I'm having a lot more of a good time, like, mentioning the funny parts.
Talking about it than watching
then,
it.
Like, when I saw those funny parts, I knew they were funny, and I knew they were funny parts, but they're so much more funny talking about than actually witnessing live, strangely.
Yeah, so, like, when I finished watching this, I was kind of underwhelmed, and I was a little disappointed, right? I was like, oh, okay, well, I remember it, and it wasn't as great as I remember it being, but like, talking about it, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and, like, going back and looking at some of the quotes and thinking about it more, That's why, again, I would love to, I think I'd love to watch this movie again, like, tonight or tomorrow while it's fresh on my mind. but anyway, interesting movie, and it's so weird. Like, John Carpenter, man, right? Because you've got Halloween, you've got The Thing, and then he does this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and well, you got Escape from New York with Kurt Russell, and then The Thing with Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And this, it's like, oh, okay. Kurt Russell, an American treasure. So good.
Man, I love Escape from New York.
Yeah.
What's the character's name? It's like
Snake Plissken?
Snake Plissken. So there's some crazy lines in this. Something, there was one about like taming the burning blade or something, and then someone like, and then Lopan was referencing his love as a burning needle or something, and it's like just these awful sexual references. And I just thought, you know, if you're talking yourself up, maybe you don't compare it to a needle, but anyway. But anyway, so fascinating movie, and like you said, it's been a lot of fun to talk about it.
Yeah.
Now I got to go watch it again.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see it again. That's weird.
In comparison to all three, I felt like I enjoyed it the most, which was unexpected for me.
Yeah, that's strange.
Well, all right. Do you guys want to move on, or is there anything else you want to mention with this movie?
Nope, I have awards. They will be there.
All right, Idiocracy, which I had never even heard of. Until it was suggested for this podcast.
I did not let know you never see. Heard of it.
You had never heard of it. Okay. Oh, interesting. Nope.
Wow.
Yep.
I apologize for all the masturbation jokes.
It's okay. We'll talk about why, right? We'll talk about
Brooke,
why, because I never heard of it.
I'm gonna mention something. JR's greeting was going to be... was going to be a Baton joke, so
I was just going to be silent until John prompted me, and then I was going to say, "Go away, Baton."
I was so tempted myself. I'm not even going to lie, because I thought, especially for me, that might be a bit fitting and appropriate, but also incredibly inappropriate. So
okay, so that's my honorable mention, best quote. Anyway, I'll just get that out of the way right now. Okay, Idiocracy. So this is the story about Joe, who's in the army, and he's got a dumb job because he lives by the mantra, lead, follower, get out of the way, and he does a really good job of getting out of the way. That's what he's always done.
I love that line, where the person is like, the officer explains to him, don't you know what that term means? It means you should lead, or at least follow. Does not mean get out of the way. Like, it's supposed to embarrass you into leading.
It's supposed to embarrass you into leading or following. It's like, well, I never felt embarrassed, right? So, anyway, Joe's a failure. He's really, they call him really average, but he feels like maybe a little below average, right?
Right. That's a nitpick of the movie. I'm like, this guy's obviously not very bright.
Yeah. So, they've chosen him because there's not much to lose to try, like, a cryogenic program, right?
Right.
So, him and Maya Rudolph. What's her character's name?
Oh, it's her character's name.
That's a Rita? Really young Maya Rudolph, by the way.
Really young.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, I didn't know she was ever that young.
Young? Yeah, yeah. I thought she was always like in her 40s.
Rita.
I don't know. So, Rita. So, I don't know. Okay, I was going to say I don't know why Rita was chosen, but I guess the officer who made these choices was really getting into the pimp life, right?
Yeah.
Like, he had a slideshow where he was presenting who he wanted to do be cryogenically frozen, and like 50 slides were with him, and it was an Upgrade,
yeah,
who was Rita's pimp. Right?
Really, really into pimp culture, this guy. Yeah.
Really into pimp culture. So, and because he's obsessed with pimp culture, like, they shuttered the program a day after they got frozen. But so here's the point. What they explain is after they get frozen, that society, this is what happens to society. Smart people don't have children, or they put off having children, or they have less children. Dumb people have children like crazy, whether they're ignorant of birth control, or they just can't control themselves, or whatever. Dumb people are having children like crazy. So 500 years into the future, and this is fascinating because 500 years into the future, the technology advances are minimal at best, right? But it makes sense.
Yeah,
because
it's part of the plot.
Dumb, right? Yeah, everyone's
but there
just
are
dumb.
Some new things that I'd like to have 500 years in the future. Some things I don't have now.
Like a time machine.
Like a time machine? Like the thing with the three wires that go in your ear, mouth, and butt that tell you exactly what's wrong with you?
I will say, so when he's explaining where the time machine is, and he's like, okay, hold on, time machine, have you been? And then like he starts over, he's like, okay, do you know where the time machine is? Like, that's his first reference point, is the place they're trying to get to. But anyway, so the point is, 500 years in the future, smart people have been bred out. They're like redheads. They're going extinct, right? And the world is ruled entirely by dumb people. And so he wakes up from his cryogenic freezingness 500 years into the future, where everyone is so dumb that he is now the smartest man on Earth. And he ends up going to prison for not paying the hospital because he didn't have a tattoo with his name on it. And at some point he takes an IQ test. I can't remember when that was. Was he at the hospital? Was he in prison?
I think it was his hospital physical.
Yeah.
Okay. Took the IQ test, and the results of the IQ test is he's the smartest man in the world. And so President Camacho, played by Terry Crews.
Nice. Was that a surprise to you?
I saw it in the credits before. Yeah. So,
So you didn't know like when you never heard of this movie, and you're like, I'm about to watch this, but like you didn't know until you started the movie that Terry Crews was in it.
So I think I pull up the IMDb page to get the poster and everything, and he's just one of the top billed people.
Right? Dang it! It would have been so good. Fun Terry to just movie. Like if you just had no idea. Okay, sorry, go on.
but he's pulled into the cabinet, and Terry Crews, who's the president, says they're about to fix all the problems because they now have the smartest man in the world. And one of the big problems is that the world's become a dust bowl. Crops won't grow. And he's completely out of his element. He's just too stupid to fix anything. But he does notice, as they're at like a field where they're trying to grow crops, that what's coming out of the sprinklers is it Brano?
Brondo.
What's the name of the Brondo, right? So they're watering plants with basically Gatorade.
Yeah.
And he said, well,
got electrolytes.
What if we tried water? And they're like, from the toilet?
One of them brings up a really good point. I never seen a plant grow in a toilet.
Yeah. All right. So they try water, and after like a week, it's not working. And so he's about to get is he getting executed or is he getting rehabilitated? Do you remember? Is this when he's about to get killed?
He's supposed to be killed, yeah.
Like in the gladiatorial.
He's getting killed in the arena. Okay,
by,
yeah,
by
he's about to get killed by Beef Supreme, right? Is about to kill him?
Yes.
Okay. But Maya Rudolph notices that the plants are growing. She brings a plant and she shows it, saves the day. He goes on to become the president, right?
Yep.
And he and Maya have three smart children who are then the smartest people on the planet. President Camacho, I think, has 8 wives and 32 children who are the 32 dumbest people on the planet. It feels like the number game still isn't going to work out. But
right. The narrator says he got the ball rolling. And so that's the, you know, that's good for an average guy, or you know, I think we all agree he's below average. But I think the movie dwells a little too much on the whole like eugenics, like you know, smart people are better than dumb people, and there's just like a little bit of a master race kind of vibe that
it's
maybe
sort of problematic.
Yeah, they do a little too much of that. But I mean, also some good points. I want to say, I'll just say this now. My big thing with this, the thing that I fear about the future, is not the dumbness of people. Like, I don't care about dumbness of people. Dumb people make me feel better. I'm not intimidated by dumb people at all. Dumbness as a bad thing is, like, kind of overrated, in my opinion. I think the big thing the movie shows is arrogance of the future. Like, that's the problem.
Yes.
The fact that everyone is so dumb, but they also have the audacity to be arrogant that everything they do is justified, that's the big problem of the future.
Yeah.
And I think the movie does a really good job of that.
I agree. I think that was one of the things that stood out to me as well, was the ability to dismiss information.
Yeah.
Because they know that they are the smartest or the best, or like, you were going to kill you because you're supposed to be smart and the things that you are saying are so outrageous that you would want to put water on plants. We're going to kill you because we know better. We know better than to listen to your garbage. Like, it is. It's this the audacity is the perfect word for it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, applicable to everyone, right? The rich people stop having babies because they have the audacity to believe that they are right and don't have a responsibility to humanity.
That's a really good point. Yeah, no, I like that.
Okay. Can I just bring into our conversation the election and the current... Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm just going to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? Like, who voted for her? And is she stupid? Is she smart and she's just acting stupid for her constituency? Like, if more Marjorie Taylor Greens get elected, then, like, I start to see this future a little bit, right? Because she's an awful, stupid person. At least that's how she comes off.
Yeah. It's the awfulness. It's the awfulness that's a bigger deal. The non-humility to just like, okay, you know what, I'm going to do the best I can, but it's like the American God-given right to do whatever I want, and I'm entitled to be right, even though I don't have to try.
And it's the idea that, like, I don't have to be smarter, I just have to be meaner, right? Or, like, where like, everything devolves into ad hominem attacks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just need to be louder than everyone else.
Yeah, I don't have to have a good policy to, like, compare against your policy. I just have to call you names, and I have to be loud and obnoxious about it. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what frustrates me, and I worry about that trend. And so, like, she's the epitome of it for me, that like, somehow she got elected based off of, like, crazy things that she believes and says, and that she enjoys popularity based on not that she has any good ideas or that she's formulating any policy, but that she is trying her best to make the other side look stupid. That's all she's got, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's like what you said, the point of this isn't like, are we interested at all in whether or not we're wrong or there's someone maybe with a better idea? No, we're not. We're just interested in being loud and obnoxious and treating those people like they're stupid. Because that's how we can fight back, because we can't fight back with a better idea. And it's fascinating that the only thing that really exists 500 years into the future from now is Fox News, which probably explains why this movie was not widely distributed.
Right.
Yes.
Or liked.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
That is the part that really scares me about, I mean, we talked about last week when we recorded about how we're like, oh yeah, I really love that movie. And then you go back and watch it again and you're like, this movie scares the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. It's not because less people are choosing to breed or certain people are breeding over others, which is a little bit concerning. But it's this lack of responsibility to each other, the lack of empathy, the lack of responsibility to knowledge and to hearing and to understanding. Like, I work with a guy at work who is very much right Republican, and he's a pastor, and he is about as opposite in political beliefs as you could probably get from me, but we have incredible conversations because we are both willing to hear each other and listen and not say, well, I can't believe you have that opinion, I hate you, but we say, why do you have that opinion? Can you help me understand that opinion? And is it based in facts that I don't have access to because of the way that our media and social media is throttled and given to us in very specific ways? Like, where are you getting this information up from? And have you fact-checked it? And what is your basis for this belief? And that's what's missing from this movie. That's what's missing from society right now as a whole. We went and saw Les Mis in Salt Lake, and I sobbed like a freaking, like, broken baby through the entire thing, because I'm sitting there in a room full of people in Utah who are very split politically and religiously and in every way possible. And I watch these people, the story from France taking place so many years ago, and nothing has changed. And we're still not hearing, and we still don't have empathy for or compassion for human evolution and the just human existence altogether, which is why I love the Philadelphia story.
It's fascinating because I think we all love Les Mis. I think we're all big fans. And when the Liam Neeson movie, not Liam Neeson, the new movie with Fat Maximus.
That
movie. When that came out, like, I think like we all recognize like all the warts in that film. But at the end of the day, you can just close your eyes and they're singing Les Mis, right? And it's still such a powerful story that you can kind of overlook the fact that Russell Crowe really sucks at singing, mm-hmm. right? Or that Hugh Jackman has a really wonky accent during some of those songs. But, I can't understand the way he pronounces some of those words. But to your point, like, I think it's not just a good idea to be able to exchange ideas where we disagree. I think it's critical, right? Because you have to have that balance. You have to have good opposition that is... But that opposition has to be smart, and it has to, you know, it has to be something that can be discussed, and we can disagree. But if your side of why you disagree is because you're just going to say I'm stupid, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't work, right? You have to actually be able to talk intelligently, and I feel that's what's missing from current political dialogue is people aren't having that kind of dialogue. And I feel like, unfortunately, I'm kind of waiting, and I don't want to get too political, and I don't know, am I afraid that I'm going to lose one of the three people who listen to this podcast? I kind of feel like until President Trump dies, like, the Republican Party's not going to get back on course, but they need to. Like, there needs to be a decent Republican Party.
Yeah. Right?
JR, we can't afford to lose that person, so I'm probably going to edit most of that out, just so you know. I'm just letting you know.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting, though, because a decade ago, and you can edit this out, too, if you want to. I read a book called And Baby Makes Three. It's when I was pregnant. It's by John and I think it's Rachel Gottman. They're two of the leading psychologists and researchers in relationships and family structure and these different things. And at the very beginning of the movie, they are giving a preface as to why it's important to have communication, why your life is going to change when you add your first child into a relationship, why. And he talks about a friend of his who is a negotiations instructor and chief for the United Nations. And this is a man whose entire job is teaching nations conflict resolution and how to negotiate with each other and how to find compromise between countries who have extreme opposing needs, like actual needs for their people, and still finding ways to make compromise. And he said, the thing that I always tell them is that before they can argue their point and have someone hear them, they first have to understand the other person's side so well that they could make their arguments for them and win. So you have to understand the other side so well that you can make their point for them and be more convincing in their point that they would want to win before you can even speak to them in a way that they're going to hear you as to why your points matter. Because if you don't understand where they're coming from that well, you're not going to speak to what they need to hear. You're not going to speak to anything that's going to compel them. And I think that is what we've lost. We do need a balanced political system that speaks to everyone's needs, but that is versed and can listen and hear well enough to understand all sides before presenting the solution. And we don't have that.
So, like, it happens all the time for me where I feel like I really understand an issue, right? And I'll, like, not debate it, but have a discussion with a friend who I know disagrees with me. And by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I didn't know as much as I thought I did, right?
Yeah.
And it's so important to be able to realize that. And it takes the other side to help you realize that. But I just feel like we're really losing that right now.
Yeah, so. I agree.
Anyway, this movie was pretty funny.
It was funny and sad. I want to bring up three things in the movie that I don't want to forget about. Okay. First of all, did anybody else shudder just a little bit? I know it's not the same. I know it's not the Capitol building, but when the mob riot went up to the White House, did anybody kind of have flashbacks? I sort of had flashbacks. I know it's not the same building.
I hadn't experienced that before, but I did this time.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, oh, that part was less funny to me. just pointing that out. And then the other thing is, did anybody notice President Camacho? Anybody notice his first name is actually Dwayne?
Is it?
Yeah, like one of his names is Dwayne, which I thought was so funny because he is The Rock, right? Like he was a professional wrestler who eventually became president, and people are seriously talking about The Rock becoming president. Like,
oh my gosh.
Which is like so, like, you know, weird to me. And the
Ronald
thing is,
Reagan, the actor?
Yeah. Like, and I've heard arguments like, okay, you know what? The Rock is really intelligent, and you know he's got a good personality, and I don't disagree with that, and I think, you know, he's probably great, and he's probably a great human being, and maybe he could be good at being president. But also, like, President Camacho, one thing that's kind of scary is he was the most intelligent person in the future. Like, he was it, right? But his intelligence wasn't what made him notable. And I think it's like funny if like, you know, if we got sick of being like in, you know, the Trump years, and it's like, okay, let's not do that again. Let's hire someone we know like has a better personality, like, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, what that does is it kind of reinforms the whole idea of who the president is, because now the president is, it's like you have Trump and then you have The Rock after that, then it's just like, okay, it is, the president is nothing more than social media is what it is. Like, and that's the whole point of it. And so, you know, maybe The Rock does a really great job. It's like, you guys, let's rethink this. We don't want President Camacho. that's totally it's no good, even though he is the most intelligent person in the future. Yeah, anyway, that's just me thinking that. And then the other thing, the other really, really depressing thing that kind of makes this movie more depressing than real life is one of the things at the Time Machine Pavilion, where they go back in the past, they actually said that the UN, at one point in the past, the UN un-Nazied the world forever. It's like, that's something that happened in this universe. It's like, okay, as bad as it is, at least the UN got rid of all the Nazis. And so now, so real life in a lot of ways is way worse than the world of Idiocracy.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. And there's, okay. There's some things I want to say, but I'll wait for awards.
We can wait for awards. Okay. That's all I had to mention about Idiocracy, but yeah, it's kind of, it's funny, and it's so funny, and I love it so much. And actually, you know, here's the last thing I'll say. I wouldn't be a big fan of the movie Ass, Oscar-winning movie Ass.
Best screenplay,
yes. But I would watch, you better believe I would watch every single episode of Ow My Balls. I would be there for that. And I'm sorry. But
so what does Joe say, like, when he's like talking to them about how they can get smarter, like, you know, it'd be great if we lived in a world where reading books wasn't just for fags, and where you could write a movie about, and in the movie there'd be real writing, and you wouldn't just look at someone's ass for 2 hours, but you would wonder why you're doing it and where it came from.
That's why we have a podcast.
Yes.
We talk about those things, yes. Man, as well, long as you're... I'm going to say this last line. I think the first lines that Frito says, or when Joe says, hey, where's the bass? And Frito says, I'll bass your ass on my fist, face, ass. Shut up! okay, funny
this
movie.
This movie has framed and, like, absolutely altered the way that I come up with comebacks to people in my life, because I speak like this to them all the time, thinking that I'm being funny because it's like in a roundabout way quoting Idiocracy, and then realizing that they probably have never seen the movie and really think that I just have some weird form of Tourette's or I'm not a normal human. So, which makes it funnier to me, but still they think I'm crazy.
So speaking of like that, so I just finished watching The King's Speech, and I knew it was rated R, but like 2/3 of the way through it, I'm like, what's rated R about this film? And then we got to the part where you learned how to not stutter by swearing like crazy. So, and I don't know what that added, but there you go.
I didn't remember that part. Okay, no, that's true. Yeah. Swears. Okay, you guys ready for awards?
Yeah!
Let's do awards. What's the best title?
Big Trouble in Little China.
I agree. Brooke?
Same.
Nice. Okay, that's...
Oh, no, I changed it to Idiocracy because I felt it was clever.
I mean, they're both clever names.
Yeah.
Labyrinth is a good name, too, but not really. Okay. Okay, Brooke, best poster?
I did Labyrinth.
I did Labyrinth, too. In Labyrinth, it breaks all the rules of my poster because there's so much kind of negative white space, which I don't appreciate on posters, but it's very painty, which I love, and it does have the rule of posters that I like where it has the protagonist very small in the foreground and the antagonist in the background very large. That always wins posters for me. Okay, Roy, poster.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Nice.
There's so much green glow, and those fingernails, they're so long, and Jack just looks really happy. It looks like that was not a picture, but just painted. Like, Jack looks a little pudgy, really happy.
I almost picked Big Trouble in Little China, because, yeah, you know, painted posters are great. Okay, yeah. Roy, best opening credits.
Okay, we're going to go with Big Trouble in Little China. I got the synthy music. It's him in his truck.
He's doing his podcast.
Express. He's doing his podcast from the truck. Yep.
Yeah.
Good John Carpenter written synth music.
All right. Brooke, credits, opening?
I did Big Trouble in Little China as well.
Okay, good for
it
you
It draws
guys.
You in.
I picked Labyrinth because you got the CGI owl, the first of its kind.
Yep.
It's like the owl from Clash of the Titans, kind of. And also, you got the David Bowie song Underground, which is playing. And it's peak Bowie. It's when Bowie knew how to be Bowie. It's like, you know, like Bowie was singing like Bowie most at this time, right? It's like, you know, he was most like that at this point. Okay. Roy, best technology?
Water.
Water.
It's what vegetables want.
All right, yeah, because it does the most for society, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
Like from the toilet, you mean? Okay.
From the toilet. I mean from the toilet, yeah.
Brooke, technology.
I did the cryogenic freezing.
That's very good. Okay, I had three things that were just too good. first of all, two from Labyrinth. First of all, there's a robot jocks that Hoggle takes over, like any controls. And then we didn't even talk about the big giant Ludo Chewbacca character from Labyrinth. But when the goblins are harassing Ludo, they're using just sticks with these like weird land piranhas on the end, just tied to the sticks. But I think maybe the winner, and this solves a lot of problems, but in the hospital they had slot machines for healthcare, which I thought was a clever idea. Which is, after all, isn't that what insurance is? Just gambling? Okay. Best food?
Brando.
Brando, good. Good food.
It's what the body needs.
Yeah, Roy?
Hoggle's peach.
The peach, the death peach.
Oh,
that sent
yeah.
her into,
yeah.
That sent her into a crazy fever dream of adolescence. Really, you like that one. Okay,
into
fine.
Her inception dream, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I went with you guys in Big Trouble in Little China, like when their girlfriends get kidnapped, they adjourn to like Wong's restaurant to have this massive Chinese feast.
Yes.
And it's amazing. That's and I'm like, wow, I can't believe they bothered to fix that, but it looked really good.
I am going to say I almost went with that feast, but I assumed someone would and that Brando needed to be recognized.
By the way, you could, when this movie was sort of advertised, but Brando was a drink you could buy for a very short period of time.
Yeah, I did read that. Interesting. We'll have to look for it. Brooke, best name?
I think I'm going to have to go with Jack Burton for the best name, since I can't remember Kurt Russell's real name because I only can think of Jack Burton.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, Jack Burton, it's a solid name. It sounds exactly like a person who talks like Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China, so that's good. Okay, Roy, name?
Beef Supreme.
Beef Supreme. Yeah, you might like Beef Supreme. I went with, I don't know if this counts, it's not the name of a person, but I went with Dildozer, the machine, the big phallic machine that tries to kill Joe in the arena.
One of them?
Yeah, one of them.
Okay.
Roy, best outfit?
I just put David Bowie because all of his outfits are fantastic.
Yeah. Just his pants?
That's all I could. That's all I noticed.
Oh, I just remembered mine. Actually, I'm changing mine slightly. Okay, Brooke, do you have one
for the best outfit?
Yeah.
I went with the matching wedding dresses.
Oh wow, that's the one I just crossed out. Perfect. The matching wedding dresses. They were really cool. I went with the gang member with the sunglasses that are white with just the slits in the eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, those were awesome.
Not very practical, I assume. I assume you can't see very well through those.
But I remember having those as a kid and being like, these are so annoying, but everyone loves them.
I don't remember those at all. I remember the Kanye shade ones, but...
Yeah, the ones that had the slits that keep going winning across, but this was like bug eye shades, right?
Yeah. Roy, do you have best alien?
Lopan, I guess, right? I mean, I can make the racist joke about him not being American... But also, he seems otherworldly, and
he does seem like an alien. You know, that counts.
Yes. Yeah. Like, yep.
All right, Brooke, do you have an alien?
Well, I had the same thing, Lopan, because he did seem otherworldly. But I also kind of wonder about the Goblin King.
Yeah, he's an alien because I believe the Goblin King is like literally didn't exist. And that makes him an alien himself. But that works. That totally works. Okay, but similar to Lopan, I went with the exploding Raiden. The lightning guy who just, like, when Lopan died, I guess he was so distraught that he, like, just inflated and then exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Brooke... this is best special effects. Roy, let me just ask you. You said you wanted to bring up a few labyrinth effects that you wanted to talk about.
Well, we can all give our awards, and then I'll remind us of all the ones we didn't do.
Okay, why don't you start with yours really quick, then?
So my favorite is David Bowie manipulating the crystal ball, which was not him. But it was a real crystal ball, and it was real hands, and someone stuck their arms underneath his armpits.
Yeah.
And like they just did it, and so that person was doing it also without being able to see.
That's pretty nuts. Yeah. It's a professional juggler, I think I read.
Yeah.
So you really can do that with a crystal ball, apparently. And it looks so easy, but obviously no normal human being can do that. So Brooke, do you have a special effect?
Mine were the walls at the very beginning of the labyrinth.
She couldn't see.
They were all dead ends, and she couldn't see around them. And
she walks forward, and her hands don't go through the wall, and then she walks to the left or the right.
Yeah. I loved that.
Wow.
Even knowing exactly what was coming, because I've seen this movie plenty of times, like, I still can't see the breaks in the wall until she walks past.
It's so crazy, and it's really reflective of life, right? And so obviously they put it in there for that reason, but that was my favorite.
It's perfect because there are vines going down the wall on the left and the right. And so what they would have had to do, I guess, is situate the camera perfectly so that the background bricks were the same size as the foreground bricks, and then just have the vines going between them so you couldn't see the seam. But, I mean, it's not like a visual effect. It just was... a perspective thing, right? And she walks toward the wall, yeah. And it wasn't there. Okay, Brooke, that's amazing, because that was mine. That was exactly my pick, too.
Oh.
So, perfecto.
The one we're not mentioning is the three-piece stone statue of David Bowie's face.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That's that. I almost picked that one, but I went with the walls instead.
Yeah. There's probably others. Those are we hit the big ones that I wanted to talk about.
Those were the big ones. Oh, I thought you had a list of like 20.
Well, I you know, then I cut 17 out, so we ended up with 3.
I want to mention Hoggle's multi-hinge door when he goes out of the oubliette. He puts the door on the wall, and he opens it one way, and then he opens it up, and then he opens it down, and it goes to different places, and it opens differently. So, also the... I mentioned the robot jocks already. and... Okay, no, that's all I need to mention. Okay. JR, best location?
So, that's Chinatown, San Francisco. I love San Francisco, and Chinatown's a lot of fun. Now, I don't necessarily want to find myself in Jack Burton shoes, but... we already mentioned, you're going to at least get some pretty darn good food.
Now, it's definitely San Francisco. Do they ever say, like, it's that Chinatown?
Yeah, it's San Francisco.
Okay.
Look at the poster. You got the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, Brooke.
Mine was the same.
Yeah.
I love San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh, we honeymoon. Well, not, okay. When I say we, I mean me and my wife, not me and any of you. But my honeymoon was in San Francisco, and I love that town. My favorite big city in this country.
I think you guys honeymooning together. I've always thought of San Francisco as the sunny version of Seattle. And I love Seattle, but I really enjoy San Francisco as well.
Right. It's East Coast, it's West Coast Europe.
Yeah.
okay, I almost picked Future Costco because you can get a law degree there. But then I thought about it and I'm like, no, it's really gross. And there's a lot of stuff just like lying around. It seemed really dirty. So I went with the Labyrinth Castle. So Jareth's Castle. Because, you know, that seemed like the nicest place in Goblin Land. And also there's the M.C. Escher room that you can go to. So that's cool. Okay. Brooke, best song. I know you hated... I can think of 3 that you didn't like. So curious what you pick.
Well, then you're going to be surprised because I actually picked As the World Falls Down.
Oh, I love that song. That's great. That was my second place winner. I'll just go ahead with my winner, which is when Camacho is up on the podium and he's trying to talk up Joe and he says, he's going to fix the economy. That's my song. Okay, Roy, best song.
Oh, I picked As the World Falls Down. Yeah, I every now, like every couple of years, I'll go in and I'll like kind of do a playlist of my 101 favorite songs, and As the World Falls Down is usually in there.
Oh, that's
nice. I really love that song. I love it. Okay, best guest star, Roy.
That's going to be David Bowie.
Oh, I didn't think of him. I should have.
Yeah, because not a typical actor, right? But here he is, and way better than like. Like Sting watched this movie and he's like, oh, I'm so glad they didn't have me do it because David Bowie did a better job and I would have sucked really bad.
Yeah, actually, I did read that in Sting's autobiography.
It is an autobiography.
Best guest star, Brooke.
Well, I'm going to do an honorable mention for The Rock since he wasn't actually in it. but I went with Bowie as well. I got a string of Bowie awards coming up.
Okay, good. Yeah, I don't think... This must be the first Bowie movie that we've done, huh? He's acted in quite a few, but this must be the first one. Okay, I went with Donald Lee, who plays Eddie Lee. Just their friend, just their casual friend. Just like, hey, man, you know? And, yeah. And he goes on their big adventure with him. He gets a gun and everything. It's just... That's just Eddie from the neighborhood. Okay. And he looked familiar. I thought he was, like, familiar, but then I looked at his IMDb, and I'm like, oh, maybe he's not as familiar as I thought. But
can I ask a question real quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Did we do best name?
Will.
No, we did best
name.
I picked Dildozer, yeah.
Oh,
what did
yeah,
I say? Right.
I can't remember what you said. You said
Jack Burton.
Yeah, you said Jack Burton. That's right.
That was a lie. I meant to say Egg Foo Young. Because it's the name of our friend.
Yeah.
I was just looking at my list of awards and realized I missed saying that.
Okay, while we're back at best name, I should have picked Miao Yin. Was that her name, Miao? Because she apparently Miao Yin, yeah. Apparently it means like green-eyed cat or something, and her name is Miao. So
that's all right. Cool. Sorry, back on track.
Okay, no problem. Okay, Roy, do you have an external recurring character?
Yes, Gates McFadden. I'm harkening back to our Star Trek days. She choreographed in The Labyrinth the dancing. When she was in her ball gown.
Dr. Beverly Crusher.
Yep.
Did the choreography for... Okay, very good. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and pick... Speaking of Star Trek, my honorable mention goes to Kim Cattrall. She was Valeris in Star Trek VI, the traitorous Vulcan. But my winner is actually David Herman. He played... he was the Secretary of State, I think, the one who always said, brought to you by Carl's Jr., because he got money every time he mentioned Carl's Jr. He played patient number one in Born on the 4th of July.
Oh, wow.
Brooke, do you have an external recurring character, one we've discussed on a different Yours, Mine, and Theirs movie?
No.
That's a pretty demanding award category.
I was going to say, I always take that question the wrong way.
Oh, I know.
But, yeah. So I was going to say David Bowie because his song is in Big Trouble in Little China. He's a guest star in Labyrinth, and I'm pretty sure he's got to be a part of the future. So I was going to say he's an external character of all three of those movies.
Right, you just helped me change an award. So
I misunderstood.
Well, you can use that as internal recurring character.
Which I now just did.
Which we never do it properly. Okay, yeah, Brooke, you get three passes, so you used one. I'm gonna mark that down.
I'll use one for that. I did have a different internal recurring character though.
Okay.
Okay,
are we there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Labyrinths. Because the house that they go into in Big Trouble in Little China is like a friggin' labyrinth. Yes. She's in a labyrinth, and Costco in
labyrinth.
The future is absolutely a labyrinth.
That's perfect. Okay. Roy, what's your new internal recurring characters? Is it the one Brooke just said?
It's David Bowie. So, okay. I had something else that was stupid. But I will say, like, it's maybe we should give a nod, and I think we already kind of have, to Kurt Russell, who's been in, like, how many of our podcasts? Like, six or seven of them. He's probably second to only Sylvester Stallone at this point.
Yeah, this is at least our fourth Kurt Russell movie that I can think of. Escape from New York, The Thing, and Death Proof, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so this is at least the fourth. Maybe others, but I can't think of any others right now. Okay, my internal recurring character is the date July 2nd, 1986, because that was the date that Labyrinth and Big Trouble in Little China were in theaters, in American theaters, at the same time. All right, cool. All right.
Well, that's cool.
Brookie, best death.
Best death. Explosive green oozing death moment from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes, perfect. With the guy who explodes.
I also have an honorable mention of the death of Dignity, because it kind of dies throughout all three movies.
Yes, yes. Okay, very nice. Roy, best death?
It's Thunder from Big Trouble in Little China. He's the guy who explodes, right?
He's the guy who explodes. Okay.
Yeah.
So, or okay, yeah, that's a recurring theme there.
Oh, no. Doggone it, that was the wrong award. I have that for another award. So the best death is Lo Pan gets the knife back, right? Like, he catches Jack Burton's knife, and then he throws it at Jack Burton, who immediately throws it right back into Lo Pan's head.
He gets reflexed to death.
He gets reflexed to death, yep.
Yeah. Okay, my best death is the second fairy that Hoggle sprays with the insect killer. She whimpers really well. Okay. JR, best villain.
Cleavon Jr. for having so many stupid offspring, which I think included like a chimpanzee and like there were a couple animals in there. But yeah, Cleavon Jr. caused the future, the bad future.
Oh, okay, yeah, very good. Okay, Brooke, best villain?
My best villain was Time, because it creates the villains in Big Trouble in Little China. It is working against her in the labyrinth, and it obviously kills society in Idiocracy.
Nice. Oh, I love your themes. Oh, that's good. Mine was similar. I just picked the year 2505. Like, just the year. Okay, Brooke. Best hero.
My best hero is Mistakes. Because I feel like Kurt Russell does nothing but make mistakes through the entire movie of Big Trouble in Little China. And she continues to make mistakes in Labyrinth that continue to remind her that she wants her brother and that's what she's going towards. And the mistakes bring her closer to the friends. And then the mistakes of putting the people who really truly were idiots into the crypto freezers, and they become the heroes later. So,
wow.
The mistakes saved the movies.
Okay, nice. Roy, hero.
I'm going to go with a young man named Jack Burton, who, despite his many shortcomings and not having any idea what's going on, just rolls with it and finally finds himself in the right place at the right time to save the day.
Okay. It's really Wong who's the hero. But fine.
Sorry.
But no, the real hero... the real hero is friendship. But also, more accurately, the real hero is Sarah. I went with Sarah. She's learning to become a young woman and a great one at that. Okay. Roy, best goof.
Okay, the Three Storms. They're supposed to be Chinese because this is Chinatown, right? Mm-hmm. But every time they respond to Lo Pan's orders, they say, "Hi!" But oh, okay. "Hi" is Japanese.
I you know what? I think I subconsciously was thinking that. I'm like, wait a second. Yeah, okay, that's good. Brooke, goof.
So my favorite goof is when they were making Idiocracy, they wanted to make everything in the future not be something that currently exists.
Yes.
And they were doing the costuming and couldn't figure it out. And so they found this small company that was making shoes. They were just a local, like, one-off company. And they're like, oh, there's no way people will be wearing these in the future. And they're like, well, what if they get really big? Like, the production manager's like, well, what if the shoes take off and suddenly everyone's wearing them when we release the movie? And they're like, there's no way people will wear these plastic shoes. Well, it was Crocs, and when they released the movie, everyone was, in fact, wearing Crocs.
That's
funny.
Oh, man, that's so funny. I've never worn a pair of Crocs. I hear they're super comfortable.
I haven't
though. Either. Yeah.
Okay.
But
so
my nephew, when they first came out, said, Mom, if everyone in the world wore Crocs, they would stop being angry, and they would just love each other again, because you just feel so good.
Yeah, so I owned one pair, and I only owned one pair because they last forever. They're indestructible, and I get it. Like, they're not the most attractive, but it's like walking on clouds. Like,
yeah.
They are
That's
the best.
That's what he said, yeah.
And see, I feel like maybe the Crocs company, kind of their failure was designing a product that you didn't need to replace very often.
Hmm. Interesting. This is an example, though, of... I don't know, Mike Judge, maybe one of the reasons for the movie's failure, and we're going to get to it a little bit more, is just the disregard for the products in the movie that are trying to benefit from the movie, but then the point is to make fun of that product, which is funny. Okay. Oh, my goof is both girls don't have green eyes. They just
don't. Yep, that's true.
Yeah. Which I guess they do in the
movie.
Okay,
I wasn't sure if I was seeing it wrong or not.
Well, I think what I read is, I mean, I can't really tell with eyes, but apparently it's really obvious in like high definition TV that they're, you know, sometimes they have like obvious contact lenses in, and I think sometimes they don't. So Yeah, that's sort of a goof. Okay, Brooke, LOL, what was your funniest moment?
I think it's, for me, it's the one that I continue to quote is when he yells, Baitin'. Every time that he yells it, it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Get enough of it.
I think that's like a common phrase in the future, I think. You know, it's just like, oh, pardon me, sorry. Yeah. That person's baiting. Okay. Roy, LOL.
Okay, I can't remember what the context was, but like someone was talking. I don't know if it was a newscast or something, but in the background it just showed like the city. And there's just a car that just drives off an unfinished bridge. And I caught it, and it was really funny. I thought that was super
funny.
That
could have been your best death, too. Maybe. Yeah. Okay, mine is... Sorry, I have to list a few things here. I do have to acknowledge that I had a hard time with Big Trouble in Little China, but as I was taking notes, I noticed... I take notes and I write LOL if there's like a potential, like this might be like the funny thing that I mark for awards. And I noticed I wrote 5 lines in a row that said LOL. So I think this sequence in Big Trouble in Little China is so masterful. So I'm just going to repeat this whole thing. And that's when the thunder comes in, he expands for the first time, and then it fires Jack backward in the wheelchair and he rolls down. And then he pulls out of the well by pushing the wheels, and then he jumps out of the wheelchair. That happens. And then immediately after that, the 3 guys say, okay, here are the guns. Oh, I'll trade you. And then they trade guns, and then Wayne grabs the other Tommy gun from Eddie, you know. And they're just switching their guns around for no reason. Okay, and then right after that, Jack and Eddie shoot... like this guy a bunch, like one of the henchmen, they just blow him away with their guns. And Eddie says, hey, is that the first time you ever plugged somebody? And Jack just goes, of course not. You know, like, I go around shooting people all the time. Who do you think I am? And then the next scene is when Jack says, okay, it's easy from now on. It's just storefronts. What does he say? We've got to get out of here, so just on the count of 3, I'll open the door, we'll get out of here, and we'll just go through the storefronts. And he goes 1, 2, 3, and he opens the door, and the entire army is right there, and then he closes the door. And he says, we may be trapped. And then right after that, in the big fight, Jack unbuckles his ankle knife and pulls it out, and accidentally just throws it off screen. Just when he pulls it out, he just throws it. So... Those were all like within 2 minutes of each other, and they all made me laugh. So I just had to mention them all. But the thing that I'm left over with, and also no one's mentioned this, but Kurt Russell's just obvious John Wayne impression. He's just impersonating John Wayne the entire movie, and I got a kick out of that. But the part I laughed most at, and I'm sorry I'm talking so much, but when they cut. In Idiocracy, when they cut to, you know, in front of the Capitol building, and there's a Washington Monument, and then there's that the reflecting pool at the Washington Monument, and it's just a bunch of dudes in jet skis just having fun in the pool. So those were all my LOL moments, so I laughed a lot. I'll just say that. Okay. JR, your WTH, what in the world, most confusing, what's going on moment?
Okay, that's when thunder exploded. So I already ruined it.
Oh, you did. You did.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, I already ruined mine earlier because mine was actually the mob surrounding the White House, which just kind of gave me, I'm like, oh, this is something that's happening again. So I did that one. Brooke, what's yours?
Well, and I kind of ruined mine earlier when I said the helping hands weren't the weirdest moment for you because.
that is a good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the helping hand sequence. I thought that was very clever. Good for them and their hands.
It is very clever, but also it's so creepy.
Yes. Okay, Brooke, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is sort of tied into my favorite quote, but it's where in the labyrinth when she's looking at Hoggle and she says, I forgive you, Hoggle.
Oh.
When he is convinced that there is no redemption for him. And he said, I'm not going to make any excuses. You know what I was when you picked me up. And he's like, hating himself so much that he only sees his core being as bad, and so he can't even apologize because he's just so bad at his core. And she just looks at him and says, "I forgive you, Hoggle."
Interesting choice for scene. I like that. I like that a lot.
Thank heavens we it's been a while since we've mentioned that you knew what I was when you picked me up. I feel like that should be at least every fifth podcast.
Yeah, it's I'm been glad a couple months, I think. Yeah. Okay, Roy, scene.
After Sarah eats the peach, the dance, and then mostly when she's in her room and she's dealing with the junk, right? The junk that she thought was important, and I just enjoy that scene.
So mostly that part.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, the junk part. I went with just the When the World Falls Down. Pretty much a music video for the David Bowie song When the World Falls Down, yeah. I honorable mention to the Escher scene when David Bowie's walking on the stairs all flouting gravity. Yeah. okay, let's skip down. Brooke, I want you to mention, because you mentioned this really quick, but what's your favorite line?
Where is it? I did have it pulled up, but now I don't see it. I'm sorry. Please edit all this jarbling, mumbling out.
I make no promises.
Or put it to music.
He says, "What have I done? I've lost my only friend. That's what I've done."
Mm.
He's like self-reflecting, and that's why that scene is so beautiful to me, because she just says, "I forgive you, Hoggle."
Oh, okay.
And she just like sees him as her friend and as a part of her story, like a real part of her story, and she forgives him just for being, which I think is amazing.
I wish I could do that. I don't really have the ability to forgive people for being. I think I'm always just thinking about myself. So hopefully I'll learn something from Sarah and Hoggle. Roy, do you have a line?
So it was, I had like 10, right? And we've done Go Away, I'm Baitin' a few times. My honorable mention then, I guess, is You Have No Power Over Me. But my favorite line spoken by David Bowie is, "Nothing, nothing, tra-la-la." I just love that so much.
You sounded like Matt Berry impersonating David Bowie a little bit. Like,
oh, good.
That works.
Jackie Daytona.
Yeah. Okay, my favorite line is also David Bowie when he says, "Fear me, love me, do as I say, and I will be your slave."
Seems like a healthy start to the relationship.
Yep. Okay, let's scooch back up here. Roy, best actor.
Okay, I'm going with Kurt Russell as Henry Swanson, middle name excitement.
Henry Swanson, when he pretends to be the phone company guy?
The guy who like wants he goes into like the brothel, right? And is looking for some fun.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. And he's wearing his used cars getup, which is a movie I just saw, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I also like the scene when he and Wong go in and as the phone company, and to prove they're from the phone company, they're just holding a phone. Like, we're from the phone company, so they brought a phone. Brooke, best actor.
Luke Wilson.
Luke Wilson.
Just because I really love him, and think he's so much more handsome than his brother, and I would have babies for him.
Really?
To replenish the earth, yeah.
Luke Wilson. Luke Wilson. That guy? Okay.
He's really good at getting out of the way.
I've just never been attracted to
him. I could use a man who would get out of the way.
Nice. Okay, my favorite actor is when Sarah says her little prayer to take her brother away, and it wakes the goblins up, and they're all in the room sleeping, and they all wake up. The goblin in the front with a white head. Yeah, that you know which one I'm talking about, but it's just that goblin specifically stands out.
Did you say it?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do taglines now.
How about?
Roy, give me your favorite tagline, and then just go through your taglines. How about?
Okay, so my favorite tagline is from The Labyrinth, where everything seems possible and nothing is what it seems, which isn't great, but there's not great taglines. I think the Big Trouble in Little China one's also mediocre. Anyway, that's what I got. Here's what I'm going with, though. Labyrinth, this is what happens when you have no friends. Big Trouble in Little China, when it rains, it thunders, and it lightnings, and it egg-chends. An Idiocracy, set 500 years in the future, but looks like your Facebook feed today.
Oh, gosh. I like that a lot. Thing. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, Brooke, do you have these?
So, I really liked the Labyrinth tagline the most, because nothing is ever what it seems.
Yeah.
But for alternative taglines, Big Trouble in Little China, where everything is green and oozy, and you just aren't sure. and Labyrinth, where you never know who you should trust, but you know you can't trust fairies.
Nice.
And Idiocracy, a documentary of what happens in the future, but it feels like it's now.
Yes. Okay.
They weren't as good this time. I'm sorry.
It was just burdensome. That was really good, just because it was just, again, with the Idiocracy thing, when you say it's like, if both of you were like, it feels like now, I was just kind of like, I was just weighed down by by the aptness of your taglines. Yeah.
Yeah. Super apt.
Okay, my favorite tagline is actually from the creator of Beavis and Butthead and Office Space. But I think it's especially funny because it's like Idiocracy is from the creator of Beavis and Butthead, and it kind of feels like, I don't know, Beavis and Butthead kind of created some of these people, so...
Yeah.
Also, not on the poster, but just on IMDb, the tagline for Idiocracy is, "The future is a no-brainer," and that's a clever tagline, so... All right.
That is clever.
My tagline for Labyrinth is, "You'll get lost in this film's imagination, whimsy, and bulge." And then my tagline for Big Trouble in Little China is just, "Kung Pao!" Which, I don't know, I don't think that works. And my tagline for Idiocracy is, "Please, please, please don't see this movie. We'll never be able to get corporate sponsorships again." Okay. Now, unanswered questions, people. Brooke, do you have any questions you want to ask us? And we will answer them.
Yes, I do. Like, the question that kept rolling through my mind as I was watching Big Trouble in Little China is, like, and I touched to it earlier, but is this movie appropriation? Is it offensive? Is it funny and humorous and, like, bringing to light cult? Like, how are we supposed to feel about this movie?
That's a good question.
The gang fights at the beginning is specifically what I'm talking about.
Okay. That
they
might
really
be a little
come
bit...
start, like West Side Story in China and start... Do they know each other by their gangs and by the colors of their robes? Like, is this an actual thing that was happening? Like, obviously not as theatrically as it was there, but was this a thing?
Okay. Maybe, actually, I'm glad you specifically, because now that I think about it, like, I am glad that gang member's glasses were on display, because I like his glasses. But if you're going to have, an antagonist who is, you know, this Lopan guy who's this, like, weird mystical god trying to be kind of person with all this, like, magic and stuff, and he's the bad guy, and then you have two other gangs, maybe that's too many bad guys. And so maybe that is appropriation, just because it's like, okay, you don't have to do that, because you could have used that... You could have used that space to have, like, maybe, like, I don't know, like, Wang's rival restaurant or something. You know, something like that. Like, maybe having just a little too many bad guys is too much.
Yeah.
So I decided to kind of look it up, because the way I feel about, like, these is like the best person to ask is maybe not quite me, but like the people who should be offended. So if you remember like a few years ago, like there was a national stink about a girl in Utah who went to prom in a traditional Chinese dress. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Where she got attacked for cultural appropriation, but like, I think it's a beautiful dress and I'm not, and it's not like a ceremonial clothing or like something like that. It's just a Chinese style dress, right? And I remember like reading the response from Chinese people saying like, why should we be offended by this? So anyway, I decided to look this up, and some Asian people are definitely offended by Big Trouble in Little China. But one of the biggest problems is that why do we need a white savior, right? That's the big problem in this film. Why can't the Chinese be their own heroes in this film?
Right, and I think that was the idea of the movie, and so that's why I was so confused that Jack Burton suddenly, like, you know, did that thing. I think it would have been cool if Jack Burton did that reflex thing to one of the Raidens, but you know, you have Wang, he's the one who dispatches with Lo Pan, like that's how it should have been, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good question. And I'm glad we finalized the whole, all of the, you know, the racial issues. We finalized them.
We fixed it.
Yeah, it's done.
Good on us.
Yeah.
Happy white people.
All right, Roy, what's your question?
Okay, is it really possible to breed out smart people? Like, is it possible?
Yeah.
Like, are we looking at a future where we are honestly going to overall get dumber? Not that smart people are going to go away, but are we going to slowly get dumber because dumb people really are breeding at a more prolific rate? And so maybe we're not, because there are like some people who, dumb or smart aside, are having more children because of religious reasons or whatever, right? But given, I guess, this equation, smart people have few children, dumb people have a lot, would that lead to a future of dumb people taking over?
May I?
Go ahead.
Yes, you may.
I feel like first we have to look to Italy. Because I don't know ratios of intelligence and IQ and whatever throughout Italy, but they are having the problem of underpopulation. They are trying to pay people and get people to move to Italy to have babies because people have just stopped breeding. And I think it's much more likely that people in general stop having kids rather than overpopulation.
Is there like an alcohol shortage in Italy?
No. No birth controls. Which is interesting, though, because of Catholicism there. I don't know. It's but then I look at America and I think, well, we're falling short of the bar of Italy in all sorts of places. So I feel like it's much more likely that things like mandatory sterilization and birth control and things will be implemented before we have an overbreeding of unintelligence. But you just never know. I never thought Donald Trump would get elected either. So
I think it's a little bit.
You can edit that up.
No, don't worry. No, I won't. Just kidding. I'm not editing it out. Don't worry about that comment. That's the least offensive thing you've said tonight. I'll say that. I don't think it's so much a matter of like smart people not breeding and dumb people breeding, but I think the most interesting thing that Idiocracy says in the little introduction is the lack of natural predators, which kind of halts the evolution. And so there's that. There's the whole, like, okay, lions aren't attacking us anymore, but we are in a position where we are automating so many things, and that's good. That's progress and everything. But I do see a situation where it's like, okay, we don't know how to make the machines that we automated anymore because, you know, because we've done all these really complicated things automatically, but when those things break down and we don't understand it anymore, then that's going to be like when we really fall. Like, I've seen so many Star Trek episodes where the computer that controls everybody breaks.
You know, it is, it's interesting to speculate, but in the end, I also feel like there is like for better or worse, the Elon Musks and the people who are trying to continue to push intelligence and push what we know, I don't see that dying in society. Regardless of population levels, I feel like there's always going to be the dreamers and the growers and the achievers who give balance to whatever else may happen. But I feel like curiosity is going to continue to exist. I don't know.
I mean, maybe there's a dip, but then that curiosity will lift us out of the dip, maybe?
Yeah. I hope.
So I was thinking about this a little bit, and I thought, like, even today, with our, like, intelligence level today, like, if we were left with nothing but average people today, would anyone know how to make a radio or a microwave or a telephone?
Yeah, I think about that all the time. Like, what is this thing? Like, I mean, it is just magic, right? As far as I know, it's just magic. It's crazy. Look, if anybody needs podcasts in the future, I know how to make one of those, but I can't make a microwave.
Do you remember the whole, like, when we're like, okay, we're going to do this podcast, it's its own thing, it's not a Star Trek podcast, and there was, like, serious fretting, right? Like, where we weren't sure if we remembered how to make a podcast?
No, I definitely, it's like, because we made a podcast, like, 10 years earlier, and it was just kind of, it was going automatically, right?
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. It's like, it's the machine. Fortunately, our machines will take over for us, just like... we took over from the Neanderthals. So carry on, machines. Okay. My question is, the door riddle in Labyrinth, she solves that riddle, but was it accurate? Or were they both lying?
I was wondering that earlier.
I paused it to think through the logic, and she got it right.
She did get it right.
I thought so.
But the door, she's like, oh, I solved it. I got it right. And then she opens the door and she falls into a trap. So even though she got it right, were they both just lying anyway?
So here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. When she goes up to them and they explain how it works, they should already be obeying the rules. Or they should be obeying their rules from get-go.
Yes.
And that's not addressed.
Right. So yeah, they both say the rules. So one of them had to have been lying about the rules, but they didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, so it feels like the rules don't engage until she asks the question, although she'd already been asking questions.
Unless,
right?
Was the one that lied the one who told her about the rules and what would happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
So maybe if that person was lying, then there's no rules at all, right?
Right.
Yeah. Although part of me thinks that maybe neither of them had any idea what was behind the door.
It could be.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe they're just saying what they were told, and they believe it to be true, and they act accordingly to what they believe. But in the end, the trick is still on them.
Yeah. But also relating this back to Idiocracy, she, a 16-year-old girl, figured it out in like 5 seconds. But I paused it and was thinking about it for like 5 minutes. I'm like, this means this and this. Wait, no, this. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I was able to follow her logic, but I would not have gotten there that quickly on my own.
Okay. Battle Royale time. All right. Roy, who wins between... Okay, who did we say? It's between Jareth... Or wait.
No.
It's not between... Sarah,
Jack Burton, and Joe.
Okay. Sarah, Jack... So they're all fighting each other. Who wins? Okay, who wins?
Well, I mean...
I'm crossing out Jareth.
I want to say that Sarah's got a chance, but she probably doesn't. Jack Burton has a knife and guns, and he has like a flask of magic potion.
Yeah.
And I think he also has like the bag of like... Well, there was another thing that Egg Shen had. I can't remember what it was called. It was like the bag of mystic winds or something. So I think Jack Burton's got the edge here just from firepower.
Oh, that reminds me. A technology I forgot to mention is the mini pocket crossbow that can lift people up through a series of pulls.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's perfect. Okay, Brooke, who wins the Battle Royale?
I was going with Jack Burton as well.
Yeah.
He just has too much in his pockets.
Yeah. As long as there isn't a ceiling close to his head, then he's winning. So, I mean, because, he can, and as we mentioned, Joe isn't that bright, so Although he did survive the dildozer. So that's proving something. Okay, Roy, go ahead and list your reason for failure. All three of these movies failed at the box office. Tell me why for these three movies.
Okay, so Big Trouble in Little China. That's the one I have the hardest time explaining. Labyrinth, I think we keyed in on. I think Labyrinth was aimed at an audience that didn't care about the movie. No. And when we get to what could redeem these movies, we're going to go in the opposite direction there, Brooke. But Big Trouble and Labyrinth, I think, was just aimed at the wrong audience. And honestly, I'm not like, because it should have been like a good kids movie, right? But I don't know. And like, I can say that, okay, well, there's some parts that are a little scary for kids, but like nothing like Dark Crystal. So I guess wrong audience for Labyrinth. Big Trouble in Little China, I don't know. I'm really puzzled about that. Idiocracy is obvious. It wasn't marketed at all. Like, it was released in very few theaters. It was killed on purpose. So that was the problem with Idiocracy. But Big Trouble in Little China, I really can't figure why it was unable to make $25 million.
Yeah, no, that is weird. Okay, Brooke, do you have reasons?
Well, the real reason, the psychological reason, is the confused mind always says no. And I think that all of these movies were just too confusing to people to get behind them. For Labyrinth, you're right, it was targeted at the wrong audience, but also the music. And then for Big Trouble in Little China...
Brooke, your name is on a list, and I'm about to strike a line through it.
Big Trouble in Little China, I think people weren't sure. Like, are we supposed to be laughing? Are we supposed to be supporting the hero? Who is the hero? What's happening? Like, his eternal asking the question of what is going on is what everyone was thinking as they watched it. And without repeated viewings, I think it was lost.
Yeah. Okay. I said the same things. For Labyrinth, it's both too kiddie and too adult, right? It was both of those things. And so there was like it was stretching the audience in opposite ways it wanted to go. For Big Trouble in Little China, it was a tone thing. As I was watching it, I'm like, I don't know how serious or how funny this is. I only know after I talk about it, you know, exactly how much of... Like, I think it was both serious and funny, too much, maybe. And then Idiocracy, of course. It was specifically... The company wanted it to fail because they did not like Mike Judge, but also, I think more importantly... Mike Judge got permission, you know, from, I guess, or the studio got permission to use Fuddruckers and Carl's Jr. and H&R Block and Costco and all these things, and he made a movie just making fun of all those people. And so, like, I think all those people who wanted to cooperate in getting this movie made, the studio was just very nervous that they were going to just... that they were going to offend all the people that they worked business with. So,
yeah.
So it's weird because I also read that like it tested really poorly, but but so okay, we can. I guess
everyone
we can,
in the audience was just.
Or were they testing
it was
average
during bait
people?
And time. Yeah,
they were testing the sponsors, right? So, but because this kind of goes into the marketing fix, right? And I just kind of feel like. This movie was pretty funny. Like, if this had gotten a wide release, it would have easily made its money back.
Yeah.
And I think it would be better known today because the humor is pretty funny. And I think even, like, the people that it's maybe making fun of could also – maybe they wouldn't guess that they're being made fun of because they might not get it. But again, launching into marketing fix. So actually market this film – and then the trailer should include 30 straight seconds of that guy getting hit in the groin.
Yes. I think, okay, my missed marketing opportunity for Idiocracy is for the studio to own it and to like actually like leak an email that said, we can't have anybody see this. This will ruin our studio. And then spread that email around. And so everybody's like, hey, we can stick it to the man, you know. By seeing this movie. And so kind of reverse psychology, everybody. But just make it obvious.
Yes, but that would require a very high level of intelligence.
Maybe. I know, yeah.
This movie.
So did Mike Judge just pick the wrong company for distribution of this film? Because he picked a company that was antagonistic to the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't read...
The big money always steps in and is like, it's too big a risk. We're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It makes sense to me.
We would rather seek for the cost of the movie than lose business relationships.
Right. Mm-hmm. But seriously, I mean, that could be... It's like, you know, maybe they would have made $50 million, but I think, seriously, the company is, like, worried. Like, we could lose $300 million worth of, like, business sponsorships or whatever. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. I would love to read a book by a studio executive because I only hear the stories of, you know, studio executives making dumb decisions, but I'd be really curious to, you know, all the make-sense business decisions that I'm sure are made that I never hear about, you know?
Yeah.
Not that it makes sense to... I don't know. It probably wasn't the right idea to shelve Idiocracy because we all need to see it. but I wonder what would have happened if Idiocracy was a big hit, if it would have caused problems that we didn't know about. And so they were that scared of those kind of problems.
Yeah. Mm.
So you think that they were looking out for us? It was in our best interest?
No, well, not in our best interest, like, morally speaking, but I think, like, 20th Century Fox, like, maybe it would have been a business problem for the studio.
Yeah.
If it got big.
Yep. Yeah.
Kind of a producer's kind of situation.
Yeah.
Okay, Brooke, did you have a missed marketing opportunity? Did you say it? We said a bunch of things, so.
Yeah, mine was just the same with Idiocracy, like... I think they either should have made it known to the sponsors to be able to have everyone on board, or have kept it quiet and done it in a way to where they could release the movie and then use marketing in their favor. But it just wasn't marketed.
Yeah. You know what? I kind of feel like Carl's Jr. right now. Is that bad?
Carl's Jr. is delicious, okay? So, all right. So the other special word was most easily redeemed, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the labyrinth, even though there's nothing to redeem. But you just add five more David Bowie's original songs.
Okay. Brooke, I assume it's take away five songs? Is that the answer?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the labyrinth, I don't know how to make it more redeemable. I think the way to make it more redeemable is to let you write the script so that the point of it being about her trauma and trauma creating a world that she has to use her internal willpower to overcome and escape from, that story needs to be told. That's a beautiful story. I didn't get that from whatever acid trip was going on the screen.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Mixed with some very confusing songs. But now that I've heard you speak to it, it's a really beautiful story.
Okay.
It's a really beautiful story. So Andy dug up some stuff, and I guess one of the uncredited writers, kind of what she was writing into it was how hard it is as a woman to make it in, like, a male-dominated society, right? Like, the Jareth was society trying to keep her from developing as a woman, right?
Yes.
So that was kind of...
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of good points and morals you can take from the movie. I think they just need to make it in a way that you can find them without scouring the internet.
Yes, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay. I think you can redeem Labyrinth by, you know what, this might be controversial, but just take away the Muppets. Then it doesn't have, like, kitty vibe to it, but it is a little bit more young woman kind of thing.
Yeah, they were confusing.
But
maybe it was the Muppets I didn't like and not the music.
Maybe. But I hesitate to say that because I really appreciate Jim Henson being like, okay, you know what, we did, like, the Muppet Show, we were doing Sesame Street, we did Dark Crystal, but just continuing a trajectory of just being like, he's pretty much like John Cusack in in Being John Malkovich. He's like, no, 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 Muppets can be for adults, you know? He was, like, trying to move Muppets toward adults, but I don't know. I guess we're just not ready for that.
Well, I don't know if you've seen really early Saturday Night Live, but that's where the Muppets began. They were featured on really early Saturday Night Live, and they were very adult.
Right, they sucked. I've seen some of those. They sucked. Yeah, they were so boring.
Not great.
I couldn't believe it. Yep. I'm like, what? Yeah, okay. It's funny. Okay, I think we're done with awards. Finally, we took longer than last time. That's fine.
We are definitely going to agree on the rankings here. I'm looking forward
to
it.
I've never been more confident that how much we've agreed on these. So,
the two of you or all three of us?
All three of us. Yeah,
okay.
We're all totally, completely in agreement on these movies. We don't even have to say them all, right? Because we're in agreement. Okay.
So, by the way, if you wanted to know the of these three movies, the one that was the best received by critics was Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, I did want to know that. Really?
And then Idiocracy barely edges out Labyrinth, but they're all in the 70s, 70%.
Oh, so, okay. Relative. So I guess that's one thing we know. Like, you don't want 70% of critics to like your movie.
Like,
yeah, because then it will fail.
You're done.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
It's like playing craps before the table's on, or after the table's turned on. You roll a 7, you're done.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, that's totally what it is. It's rolling a 7 first on craps. That's interesting, because it's like a 70%, too. 7s work out. All right, mm-hmm. Roy, I'm nervous what Brooke's going to say, so I'll have you go first. What's your third favorite?
Okay, so I'm sticking with it, because I don't believe in changing. Because I can't change and you can't change and nobody can change. So I'm going to say Big Trouble in Little China, but I really want to watch it again.
Yeah.
But that's my number three.
Right. Okay, Brooke, what's your number three?
It's fine, Brooke.
Well, but I'm not sure.
That's fine. That's good. I love it.
Actually, I'm gonna go with Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh,
that's
my number three too. But again,
because it doesn't have the sustenance to it. It doesn't have a takeaway.
It's
except that the accidental hero can be an asshole and still have some redemption in the end, which is like a good message. But also, they didn't need him, so
It wasn't super clear. It undercut itself. Like, I liked how subtle it was with that. Like, it didn't come out and say, this isn't the main character. But I think and it was very subtle, and I appreciated the subtlety, but then it undercut it by the beginning sequence where, you know, Egg is talking about how great of a person Jack Burton is, and Jack Burton's swagger at the end, and then him dispatching the main guy at the end. I think it kind of undercut a lot of the subtlety of him just not being that great. So, I think all that. I went with Big Trouble in Little China as my third, which is... but I remember watching it and not really appreciating it, but watching it on this one, I appreciated it a lot more. I think it's kind of one of those where the 30th time you see it, that's when you realize that it's all along it's your favorite movie you've ever seen kind of thing. One of those. Brooke, what's your second favorite?
Labyrinth.
Very nice. Okay. I'm supposed to go.
Although I will say it's after your explanation of it.
Nice. Oh, yeah, that's sweet of you to say. Thank you very much. And I was kind of hoping it would go that way just because... And I don't know why I picked a certain kind of viewing of it so much because I'm not a young woman anymore, you know?
I really appreciate it.
But... I think I'm just removed enough from being a teenage girl that sometimes, I don't know, I think it enables me to kind of, to see it in that way because it's an experience I never really had, and so I plant myself in more than I should, probably. Okay, Roy, what's your second favorite?
I'm going to go with Idiocracy.
Idiocracy is your second favorite. Okay.
Yep.
All right. You're with me. My second favorite is Idiocracy, and my first favorite is Labyrinth. Labyrinth is an all-timer for me. It's a personal thing, so.
I gave it much more thought at the end there than I would have otherwise.
Okay.
So nice. Thank you for getting me closer to liking it and moving it out of third position and almost into first, but I'm sticking with.
That's my biggest victory this year.
It is, actually.
I put the pen down, so your name is safe.
Yay.
Oh, that was close. That was a close one. Okay, that's good. Okay, we're finally wrapped up with rankings. It's time for future business. I believe, is this where we usually get JB on the phone? Where, you know, we play what we talked about?
Let's get JB on the phone.
All right.
Oh, Flinders, are you ready to bring this one down for the ladies?
I mean, if John's ready, then yes.
I was born ready. Wait, hang on. Okay, I'm ready now. I was born ready. Okay.
Hang on, I gotta keep messing with my levels. Oh.
All right. It's good to hear your voice, sir.
Likewise.
You told Roy your movies for next time, but you didn't tell me. Do you want to go ahead?
I do. I have a spreadsheet that I will send you, John. I did not have your email address, but I'm happy to send it to you. I had to break down my movies into 9 categories. Genres, I believe you would call them, as you are a movie buff. But let me break this down. So I have 3 what I would consider favorite movies that you have not already watched, right?
I am so excited for this.
Demolition Man is my favorite action movie. You've already watched it.
Yep.
Defending Your Life is one of my favorite comedies you've already watched.
Oh, no way. Would have been fun to talk to you about that. Okay, sorry about that.
That's good. That's one of my – but it allowed me to adjust. Schindler's List, I think, is the best movie ever made, but I'm not ready to watch it again. I watch it every 5 or so years, and then I just can't watch it again. It's too hard on my soul.
When the planets align.
So in lieu of Schindler's List, I would like to watch my second what I consider best movie ever made, which is Apocalypse Now.
Okay. Okay.
And I think we should give extra credit if you also watch the documentary, because it's also my favorite documentary ever made. Heart of Darkness. I'll leave
that
up to you. Yeah.
See what I can do about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, I think we could just watch it and then only talk about the movie. But I think it's a fantastic documentary about everything that goes wrong with the movie.
I will try to watch the documentary. I mean, we probably won't do we won't do a segment on it, but we will pepper in the conversation for sure. Okay.
That would be great. Yeah. Again, I think that's one of the reasons why it's such one of my favorite movies is because so much went into it that it made me realize I don't ever want to be a filmmaker in any way. So for the second piece, my favorite movie to watch, not the best movie ever made, but my favorite, although I do think it's a top 5 in the best movies ever made, is The Fellowship of the Ring. But I don't want us to get involved in a trilogy, because it's really hard to watch the first part of a trilogy then abandon it. So I would like you to watch The Hobbit and the Return of the King animated films from 1977.
I should have seen that coming.
Should have, because that was like my favorite. Like, that was one of the first movies I remember watching with my parents and my dad singing along.
Not for that reason, because I'm on a text chain with JR where he requested that from somebody.
Okay. Yes, that's probably why, because I don't think you can. So what happened, and we'll talk about this in the podcast, is so they did The Hobbit, Rankin and Bass, super funny and terrifying. Like, I have not seen a more terrifying cartoon. Like, the orcs are just horrifyingly drawn, right? Uh-huh. So it's old school, like Dark Crystal. Then they switched production companies and went to a live action animated film and made the first 2 books of Lord of the Rings, and it's horrible. And then they went back to Rankin Bass and made Return of the King. But since the movies are so short, I'd like you to watch Hobbit and the Return of the King just because you get the music, right, and all the cheesy stuff that I want to talk about.
Okay, wait, just to make sure. So The Hobbit and Return of the King.
Yes.
Okay, so we're skipping the middle 2 books. Well, the Fellowship and – it's just called Fellowship of the Ring movie where it covers 2 towers too.
It's actually called Lord of the Rings, and they do the middle 2 books. And, I mean, you can try to watch it, but it's so off-kilter, and I really like the first and the third. They kind of bookend really well. And you got John Huston as the voice of Gandalf, and so It's kind of fun. It's closer to what I think the book is, because there is the singing, you know, scary dragons, scary orcs, a little bit more. I used to watch it. I watched it all the time as a kid, and I want you guys to watch it and see if you were as terrified by the some of the drawing. Like Gollum is terrifying, and all the bad. So I just, and you know, nowadays I don't think we have as much terrifying animation as we used to. But anyway, if you don't mind, I'd love it if you would watch both.
Okay.
I will interject that it might be difficult to get Return of the King. That's why I reached out to Zoe to see if he could find some illegal digital copy. But JB, you may need to like mail the DVD around or something.
I'm happy to do it. I think I could probably pull it to a flash drive.
Okay.
And email you guys flash drives too. Again, I think it's fun because it's just worth having them both. I think it does the books good justice because it includes a lot of the stuff that I think Peter Jackson left out. I don't know why, but it's just really fun. And
okay.
So the last one, I had to parse through a large set of other films, like, you know, Fury Road, which you've already watched. I love the Alien series, which I love. You know, I have the Fifth Element, right? I have a sci-fi list. I have a martial arts list for Enter the Dragon. I have a South Korean horror is one of my favorite genres, so I had four or five there. So when I send you the list, you're welcome to parse through it, check out some random stuff. I was tempted to go with American President or Ghostbusters because they're sort of my favorite uplifting kind of films. But what I think would be more fun is, because it's a movie I remember of, you know, I'm going with movies that I have fond memories of, and this is one of the movies that I went, I really don't know anything about life. The Seventh Seal.
Okay.
And I know I talked to Roy about this, and he goes, you know, way to class it up, your selections, right? You go from Martin Sheen punching a mirror to animated singing to, you know, a really good existential film. So,
right. Fortunately, JB, we've already watched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. So
I was worried that was going to be my choice. You know, I was going to have to say no Temple of Doom or Remo Williams. But I think my choices were between Ghostbusters, American President, and 101. I think I'm going to get lucky and I'm going to be able to watch 101 with the number choices.
Right. I was going to say, so after next time, the numbers, the movies with numbers in the title, not sequels, will probably be nominated. So, yeah, so we might be able to watch 101 if everything pans out.
And you're going to get a pick, JB. It has aligned. The stars have aligned.
I would really enjoy it just because that was the movie that reminded me of us, right? All the stuff we did in high school and all the fun we had. So it was kind of like, I got lucky, otherwise I would have moved it up to third and we could have watched it together or done a watch party on it. But I'm glad we can hopefully get to do that anyway. And we can watch it after we watch these three. But I'd like to do kind of a watch party with, you know, the us and anybody, you know, if we want to have Kiss Your Franchise come in and watch it with us, it'd be fun. But that's one of the ones that reminded me of all the good times we had in high school.
Right.
I would come in and watch that with you.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Brooke if you were going to.
Yeah,
if
we'd love to have. I mean, all of us, you got to have Andy and Brooke and all of us who remember the TimView days when, you know, that was kind of a lot of our genre to do that. So
when Mr. Paulson was talking to us about groffing.
It is so weird that we all went to high school together.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
But those are the and John, if you kick me your email, I'll send you the list. And Brooke, I'm going to post it you know, on our Google Drive so you can see all the chaos I went through. But Singing in the Rain was up there because that's my all-time favorite musical. Ghostbusters, but I think everybody's seen it. You know, American President, but I didn't want to get into an Aaron Sorkin discussion. So let's go with Seventh Seal. You know, if we have time, I'd love to watch that with all of you too, because that was kind of like that Defending Your Life where it really got me into what are we really doing here. And then I watch 101 and I remember that role.
This is fascinating because this is going to be the first Not the first Max von Sydow film, but the first Ingmar Bergman film we've done on this
because,
podcast.
Because of Strange Brew?
Because of Strange Brew. Yeah.
You're throwing and, in all, and Minority
all of his
Report.
Classics?
Yeah,
yeah, all of his classics.
Oh, Max von Sydow. Okay, no, that's perfect. We should do more Bergman, though. We should. We're adults. We watch Bergman films.
Well, and it was funny because, again, in my top 10, I had, you know, Seven Samurai and, you know, Nine Queens and some of the foreign movies. And you know, there is a lot of
we'll be
really
watching both
stuff.
Of those in the number podcast that you're going to
do. What about the Seven Venoms?
I do have a lot of number movies, don't I? I mean,
I was expecting Fifth Element from you.
That was another one I wanted
you guys
to break
have never down. Done Fifth Element?
Strangely, no, we haven't done Fifth
oh
Element.
Oh my gosh. Okay, that's what we should add to the other two movies.
Yeah,
Savannah numbers. Smiles, Fifth Element, and what was the third one that we just talked about tonight? Dune.
Dark Crystal?
No. Dune!
No, Dune.
Dark Crystal. Dune. It was Dark Crystal.
Oh, dang. Yeah, Dark Crystal. Of course, that's right. Yeah.
You don't want to watch 5.5 hours of Sting. Come on, Roy.
Oh,
yes.
You weren't here when you were talking about Sting. I love him.
Till he takes the knife through the neck, then it's like, oh, okay, this is a good part.
I will kill you! I love Dune so much.
Spoiler alert, he takes it through the face.
Do we have Worm Sign? Yes, we have Worm Sign. The likes of which God himself has not seen! Dune is the best movie.
I've never seen Dune.
I've never seen Dune either.
JB, you know, you're still on the call. You can replace Seventh Seal with Dune.
I'm gonna put a 3 and call it Dune 3, and that'll count as our number movie.
Yeah, okay.
Just change the E to a 3. No, because that was I was thinking. If I didn't like 101 so much, I would have done 7 with the 7 in it, because that's how it is in the actual
that
film.
That counts. Yeah.
I mean, I had all kinds of number movies. So anyway, those are my three. One of the three the three best movies ever made. A animated version of my favorite film, and then something in lieu of Defending Your Life and Ghostbusters, which, you know,
all right.
The existential.
All right, Flinders. Well, I really appreciate your thought into this, and I'm glad you did 11 hours of work in coming up with those.
That's Brooke and I were talking about that, because Brooke had like 60 movies and spreadsheets, and I was like, well, I better pony up, and then it does. You just I'm like,
I went
oh,
all in for this.
You do. You're like, oh, I love Sneakers, and oh, I love Hot Fuzz, and oh, I remember Runaway with Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons was the bad guy, right? So you go off on all these tangents.
It's like Schnauzer.
And The Running Man.
I feel like I should have spent more time on my movies. I was just like, ah, whatever.
I have Arachnophobia because I really want to watch that again.
Arachnophobia. Oh, that reminds me of JR's basement. Holy cow.
Oh, man.
All right, Flinders. Okay, well, we'll talk to you in, I don't know, about 20 days, actually. We're going to have a lengthier time on this next section. So we're going to need the time because you, through loopholes, you gave us 5 movies to watch
instead of 6.
Isn't that great? 3,
yeah.
I'm so terrible.
Yeah.
I really apologize.
I didn't know I could have taken loopholes.
Yeah.
You didn't know about the Sliding Doors documentary you could have worked in? Which is just an hour and a half of her learning her accent.
Probably, and she still fails.
Well, I'm actually excited because it's been a couple years since we've done like the 6 movie podcast. Or I mean, we had a couple back in our early days where it was like just a giant slate of films.
It's always off air, but like whenever we do 6 movies, I yell at Roy for like 10 minutes. Like it's just screaming. It's just screaming. Like, you know, what has my life come to? Like, I really blame him for a lot of things outside of the movies too. So, so I'm glad I get to yell at JR again.
I don't know if it makes up for it, but we did watch 8 hours of O.J. Simpson.
The O.J. Simpson movie was that was 8 movies. Yeah,
that's too much O.J. I mean, eventually you gotta turn. You can put it back in the fridge.
Good piece of media, whatever it is. Yeah.
All right. Thank you all for letting me sneak in for a minute.
All right.
Thanks, JP.
Bye,
Brooke. See you soon.
All right. Well, we got that to look forward to. Oy vey, man. I hate all those movies. I'm glad he's off the film. Whatever.
So I have actually seen all of them except for the I haven't seen the Heart of Darkness documentary, but I've seen all the films.
Oh, you have seen all of them. Didn't you say, I thought you said you only saw two of them.
Okay, Return of the King I haven't seen, but I know I've seen Seven Seal. I know I've seen Apocalypse Now. I haven't seen the Redux version, but I've seen Apocalypse Now, and I've definitely seen The Hobbit. Some teacher probably made me watch The Hobbit.
Yeah, I haven't seen I think I have seen all of them except Return of the King. Yeah. Except I think I missed the last half hour of Apocalypse Now because it's like, boy, this is taking forever, but I guess a lot of stuff happens at the end.
I do remember watching The Hobbit and like all those movies as a kid.
Yeah.
And I loved them. Mm. I thought they were fascinating.
So same production company, but I'll just go ahead and reiterate again, The Last Unicorn is one of my very, very favorites.
Really?
Good films, yep.
I was just talking about that movie this weekend with Brooks Bird.
Yeah. Oh, I love that film. Oh, I watched it again just a couple weeks ago. I love that film.
Wow.
All right.
All right. There's JB on the phone. Okay. We did that.
Thanks, JB.
Wow. JB, those are some great picks. We're going to have a lot of fun watching those movies that you just mentioned.
All just mentioned. 15 of real them. Time. In real time, 5 seconds ago. Thank you so much, JB. Okay. Okay, what other future business do we have?
Okay, I will refresh for the last time, but I don't think anything has changed.
Okay.
John, I was really pulling for your category. I think it would have been a lot of fun.
Right, the primary colors category where we have to watch a red, yellow, and blue movie.
Not anime?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anime is also a category. So,
yeah, Brooke, your anime. I thought for sure everyone was going to vote for anime. Because there are so many good anime movies, obviously, but maybe it was too not specific. People didn't vote for it as much.
Maybe. So it's weird because like I kind of like dismiss anime, but also the only anime movie I've ever seen was Your Name, and it was really good.
Yeah.
So what can you say? But we are going to watch movies with a number in the title. Not sequels. That does not include sequels. So unfortunately, we are not going to be watching Rocky III yet. But you know, like 12 Years a Slave.
Now, Ocean's 11, but not Ocean's 12.
So, I think Ocean's 12 is okay. If it was Ocean's 11 Part 2, but sure, Ocean's 12, sure. But I mean, there's a ton of them. I mean, like The Fifth Element, like you said, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good movies with numbers in the title.
101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, 101 Dalmatians.
Oh,
yeah. We discussed this before you got on. I don't know if you've seen Cruella. I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
I haven't seen it yet. I want to.
Yeah. So, like, if you're a big fan of the cartoon, this is not going to answer any questions for you. But if you just want to enjoy good, fun acting and some good music and really great costumes, then it's fun. And her helpers are good times too. Okay, so yeah, movies with numbers in the title. There's quite a few. We'll have a poll and we'll see what wins, and hopefully I can influence it because I don't get to pick one. That'll be you and JB and the fans, John. So let's see. Then the category after that, I am now calling Scott Steals the Show and Our Hearts. So Scott Steele is going to join us for two podcasts, and the first one, of course, is his three favorite movies. And then
yes.
Next podcast, we'll see what the categories
weather
coming
permitting.
Up.
Weather permitting. Yeah, he's in. He said he was in. And he usually doesn't let me down like so many of my other friends. But those of you who've been listening to me on podcasts, you know, for a while now, this is the same Scott Steele who was on the Geeking Off podcast with me that I did several years ago. So, and he's been telling me, he's like, I've been meaning to talk out loud again and have it recorded and sent out to the internet. He misses it, so, yeah. So he'll have some movies. I hope everybody likes Shaun of the Dead because I guarantee you that's one of
the movies. I love it.
So, I think that's all the future we have.
That's it.
Is that it? So I guess that's it forever.
For future Don. John's okay then?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to give our we can give the outro just in case someone's listening to this for the very first time. This is our how many podcasts have we done now? 50 something? I don't know.
This is our 62nd one.
There you go. Yeah. So we've been doing this for a while, and if you want to listen to every podcast, I think our inaugural podcast, speaking of Kurt Russell, am I wrong here? It was The Thing, right?
Yes, the first one that we did was The Thing, where we watched six movies, which I hated. We watched The Thing and The Fly, and also, what else did we
watch?
True Grit, yes.
Yeah. So you can hear all those podcasts on our, go to the blog, it's yours, mine, theirs, podcast.blogspot.com. And I love going to the blog because that's where John, like, says he marks up the timestamps for everything, and lots of funny stuff in there.
Yeah.
If you really want to get into the real fun, though, you can help us pick the categories we're going to do, and also you can help pick one of the movies. So there was a period where our fans were really mean and made us watch things like Batman and Robin, like. So if that's your thing, then hop on and force us to watch something crappy. Mm-hmm. But we have a good time, and you guys get to vote in lots of polls and make crazy comments, and we occasionally do watch parties. So get on Facebook and have some fun with us.
Yes. All those things. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, do all that. Okay, one more thing. I finally found it. I always look for this every time, and it like takes me forever to find. But if you don't want to go to Facebook, if you don't want to go to the blog, or if you do that anyway, if you don't want to read anything or write anything, you can call us up. Give us a call, 801-896-4542. And leave a voicemail. We'll play the voicemail just on whatever. So you may be concerned about something that we're doing, or you may have a point about, you know, say, Big Trouble in Little China that we missed. We'd love to hear about it. We'd love to hear from you. Vaccinations are out, but I am still mostly in my house just waiting for the phone to ring, so please do that and give me a call. So, okay, I think we're done. I think we're done.
Yay! Hey, this was a 3-hour one. We got back up to our average.
Yes, we're back.
Up. One more thing. I don't know if you want to slip this back in, but we are looking for fresh blood.
Yes.
So if you listen to this podcast and you're keeping quiet, we would love to have you on and explore your movies, and then force you to watch what movies that we make you watch as well.
Right.
So please speak up. Let us know.
Yeah. Don't like. I mean, Brooke was good enough to be tortured with these movies that, you know, are a cloud of haze. And so you have to do that too. If you're listening to this right now, you have to subject yourself in the same way Brooke has this time. So I just want you guys all to consider that. You know, we don't have a Patreon or anything. Your penance for listening is possibly contributing, so you can contribute with us, so that'd be fun.
Yeah. Hey, you may come on and decide that you're going to share your 3 favorite Ingmar Bergman films with us, and that's great. And then 2 weeks later, you're going to watch the sequel to Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah, that's very distinct possibility. Yeah. One of the new categories that is up for discussion, JR, I don't know if you noticed, I added a new category, which is sequels to movies that we've watched on the podcast already.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, so obviously Dream a Little Dream 2 is going to be is going to be the one.
Rocky 3 is my favorite.
And then Rocky 3.
Rocky 3 is your favorite Rocky?
It is. No, 2. Rocky 2.
Okay, that makes more sense. Although, so I will say, like, Clubber Lang, he holds nothing back. He is so good at Rocky 3.
I love Rocky 3, though.
Yeah,
I love them all. Well, all right, I digress.
No problem. Okay, you digress for the last time, Brooke, because we're saying goodbye. So, Brooke, this is not the last time. I pray it's not the last time. So come back soon.
Me as well. Thank you.
Hey, go check out Brooke on Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye, where she regularly podcasts, currently talking about Disney princess movies.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
She loves Snow White and hates Sleeping Beauty. It's fascinating.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. No, again, Brooke, thanks again. We'll see you real soon. It was a lot of fun. I loved your words, and I'm done talking, so I'll say goodbye. Do you guys want to say anything else?
Nope.
I'm done speaking.
Perfect. Nice. That's your clubhouse sign off, right?
That's my clubhouse sign off.
Yeah. which is fine. And actually, you know what? It's coming up, right? When are you guys doing Rhinestone? Isn't that coming up?
We're doing Dolly Parton's right now. We're doing 9 to 5 this week.
Doing 9 to 5 this week.
Oh, my gosh. Oh! Okay. Okay, Andy. Okay. Andy, on your guys' page, solicited what movies people were interested in. Brooke, and I told him that I wanted to do 9 to 5 in Rhinestone, and I'm getting skipped again because I also know I told him that I wanted to do Sleeping Beauty. You listening to this, Andy? probably is. He's one of our two listeners.
I know he had Rhinestone on there.
You're up for Rhinestone, yeah.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say. I make no promises. I am beholden to... No one is beholden to me. We're supposed to record on Wednesday. I know you've got a busy week this week. Maybe message Andy. Maybe see if we could wait till Sunday or Monday.
There's no way you could do it on Wednesday, huh?
My life's going to get so crazy. So yeah. Fine, you guys watch your 9 to 5, but I'm going to watch it. I don't need to be on your podcast, but I definitely need to watch it.
I could probably
amazing.
I might call in, Brooke. I might call in from the hotel I have in Virginia to talk 9 to 5 with you guys. I may as well. I can. My life's not that busy.
So yeah, so
I'm not going to. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to make Roy mad.
Thank you. I'll watch 9 to 5 with a pint of disappointment ice cream.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm not sorry. I love this. This is
delightful. I feel like all I do is bring you bad news.